weeks at number one for the Foo Fighters with Rope. Thanks to Kevin Llewellyn for stopping by, enlightening us on some darkness.
Yeah.
Indeed. Check out his art at his website, which is kevart.com, K-E-V-A-R-T. That's it for me and Carrie. We'll see you next week when we play you the biggest songs in rock, plus a couple of songs that are handpicked by me for you. Carrie, let's get out of here.
Let's go.
See ya.
The Sox Show is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
All aboard! Time has come for each and every one of you to decide whether you are going to be the problem or whether you are going to be the solution.
That's right.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, Peter.
And thanks to Athena for putting together that new open of ours. I like that.
Sounds good, yeah. We like to keep it fresh, but neither you or I do any of that kind of stuff. So we rely on the talented people who work on the show.
Well, if we're in the biz a little longer,
yeah,
maybe we'll learn.
I don't know.
Didn't I say this last week that during the Bush regime that I used to begin the show with saying, I don't know where to begin. I mean,
well, we still say that a lot.
Are we at there now? I'm looking over. If you could see this console here, where we have all the little levers and faders and dials and everything like that,
it is just bells and whistles.
It is just spread with stories that.
Stories of insanity, of stories of a world gone mad.
Well, you know what? It really has. You know, it's funny how, and I say this often, it's sort of simultaneously the world gets crazier and crazier, more and more bad things happen, and yet in our daily lives, in our families, our friends go out places and have fun, that continues apace.
Yeah, it does, but it's slowed down for a lot of people.
It has. In Sarajevo, in Bosnia, in the early 1990s, when the Serbs had Sarajevo surrounded, and they had snipers in the hills, and you could easily just walk down one of the main streets of Sarajevo and get shot. But somehow or other, they would kind of clear the snipers out, and immediately everybody would run to the cafes, order meals, order drinks.
I think that happens in a lot of different, you know, Baghdad, for example, you know, and maybe in Israel.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the human spirit is indomitable. I mean, now that sounds kind of cliched and all that, but it really is. In Nazi concentration camps, the Jewish inmates put together symphonies and what have you.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. I'm avoiding, though, trying to figure out where in the world to start.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
I mean, we could talk about the Tea Party, the baggers trying to rejuvenate their party this weekend.
Yeah. You know what, though? Let's back into it like this. Last week, I was reporting, let's say, although being a little critical of the fact that the Monday, April 4th march in Detroit, a pro-union, pro-working class, pro-middle class march, attracted so few people. But there was another march in Detroit this weekend, and 20,000 people showed up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad to say I didn't hear anything about this march until one of our listeners informed me about it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Are we talking about the same march?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Detroit Prayer Walk draws thousands downtown to proclaim faith in Jesus Christ can help city. So what's wrong with this picture? For one thing, and I didn't even like this perspective on the Martin Luther King, although you know he was a Christian reverend, that it was a prayer vigil for middle class and working class and union rights.
This and you're was talking April 4th. About, this yeah,
was, yeah, that was
a
April
week
4th.
Ago, not this one.
So there was a heavy religious component to it. But at the same time, the ministers that help the AFL-CIO, the Wayne County AFL-CIO, put this all together, and also Bob King, the president of the UAW, yeah. is very prominent in this, is a very religious Catholic. His peace and social justice work is motivated by that. I don't know, and we never got a figure on it. It was maybe 3,000 at the absolute best.
That were downtown.
Yeah,
before.
So here was both a religious message. Why is it so hard for me to say religious message?
Well,
yeah, it's okay.
I don't know. I have some theories on
yeah,
that.
Okay. Religious message along with a pro-people message. So it would have worked. So a couple thousand. Maybe there's only 2,000 people. If anybody was at that march on April 4th, and it commemorated the day that Martin Luther King was assassinated. Martin Luther King Jr., of course, involved in a union struggle in Memphis at the time. And I think I said that week that his opposition to the war in Vietnam and his decision to start acting on behalf of working people and poor people probably sealed his fate.
Yeah, how dare he, right?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I don't have my cheat sheet here. It just occurred to me.
Oh, phone numbers.
Phone numbers. Yeah, this is a phone-in talk show. This is not just the Peter and Jolene show. This is Night Call, you know, featuring us.
It may appear that way at times.
But you get to intervene as well.
Yes, we want you as part of the show. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743.
My famous website, the last name of which I have to spell every time, has an interesting message on it. It's Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And at the top, big red banner, it says, new website coming. No new additions will be made to this site until April 25th. Please check out the current links. The links on there are still good. And join Peter on Night Call's Facebook page. And if so, you can go to that site.
Sure.
Or you can just go to Night Call, I'm sorry, Facebook.com/nightcall. And there's lots of stuff going on there. New friends always want.
Yeah, we've been creeping along. I think we have close to actually 900 friends. We said because we were so kind of not active
anything.
For a long time. We were at about 50 for a long time.
Right. And what is this? Oh, there's a new message from Jolene. Hello, Facebook friends. Peter and I are looking forward to tonight's show. As always, we'll talk about the continuing war on public employees, recent protests in Madison, and again, try to make sense of it all. Okay.
Join us.
Yeah.
And here we are.
All right. Let's talk about the Detroit Prayer Walk. And I don't... by the way, too, the Union March on April 4th was cross-religious. So they had mostly Christian ministers, because that's the predominant religion around here. Mm-hmm. But they also had a Muslim imam, and they had a rabbi. I don't know if they had anybody. I didn't stick around, but they started praying. I left.
Yeah, you were out of there.
I said to my friend, let's go get something to eat.
Well, you know, this prayer walk is something else because, you know, this article in the Free Press, the second paragraph is a quote from a woman who says, Jesus is the only hope we have for the city of Detroit. Well, you know what? Then you and I are screwed.
Yeah, right. Or the city's screwed.
The city's screwed,
We're not cooperating. Oh, by the way, if you go, I forgot about that, from that march, that April 4th march, there are photographs on the Facebook page, including me and my friend who left as soon as they started praying.
Yes. oh, my.
Yeah.
Where did this come from? This is a certain... evangelical pastor that's kind of popping up in the news.
It's called
right?
Each, Everyone a Chance to Hear. I'm not sure what that means. But let's go through that again. It was a good quote. Phyllis Bowles, 52 years old in Detroit, said, as you just quoted, Jolene, Jesus is the only hope we have for the city of Detroit. He is the only way. This city was built on faith, but we've lost our way. Anybody want to call and explain
what
in the world
mean?
That mean? For one thing, of course, the city was not built on faith. It was go tell Henry Ford the first that, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so it's about 500 churches and Christian organizations, many of them evangelical. They plan 40 days of activities to spread the gospel of Christ, which they believe can change lives. Whatever. Detroit police did not provide attendance figures, but organizers were expecting about 20,000. After an intense prayer that included speaking in tongues, Diane Landgreb of Rochester said, "This city is God's city. We will see God turn this city around. He is the only one that can do it."
Wow.
So, I mean, isn't that disempowering rather than powering? I mean, that you...
Don't worry. Just sit back and wait and pray. And
well, you beseech.
JC's got it taken care of, man.
You beseech this greater power that has the whole world in his hands, right?
Got the whole
world in it. Well, in the Scientific American, did you read this little study?
I did.
They said it said this sounds like roundabout psychobabble, but stick with me. According to a Duke University psychologist, Aaron Kay, and his colleagues, God and government are more than just two sides of the same U.S. coin. You know, this isn't God we trust in the coins, even though there's been suits against that. In fact, they share a common cognitive denominator. Whoa, they are getting... In other words,
deep, man.
You know, how you view the world and all that. For most people, both God and government function alongside one another to provide us, unthinkingly so, with a supportive sense of external control. In other words,
we're being controlled.
Well, people don't have enough self-confidence.
Yes.
That we can collectively empower ourselves to function in a manner that makes the things happen that we want to happen. Instead, we are depending on government. I mean, we can empower government to act on our behalf rather than acting on behalf of the corporations and the wealthy as this one does. And some people utilize God in that manner. But the people that I know that function as empowered human beings, if they are religionists, they have both that sense. They have a sense of individual empowerment, and the more people they work with, the more that the people are empowered. And they don't just have to hope that God takes care of them. I mean, what did this, I mentioned concentration camp. What did the Jews do to deserve that?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and these the people you're talking about, Peter, aren't the kind that would ever say something like, you know, Jesus is the only answer for Detroit.
This is meaningful. This is the fact that we have this sense that this greater power can take care of us. This is meaningful, reason these psychologists, because only in a stable, predictable, organized world can we fragile human beings feel as though we have any personal influence over our surroundings. Now, that's true. You know, in other words, that the what's everybody wants. I mean, when you're younger, you want to more frequently. You want a sense of adventure. You might, you know, go bungee jumping or go off mountain climbing or something like that. But even still, very frequently, the people that do that still have a stable home. And most of us want that. We don't want to have a sense of, are we going to lose our job tomorrow? Is this city going to go further down the drain? Is there going to be another war? Is the radiation going to reach us from Japan?
A little more stability.
That's very understandable. Yeah. The relative degree by which we invest psychologically in an all-powerful God or a viable man-made government is inconsequential, says the psychologist. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, was that the other? There was a couple other religion things. Where is it? Why is this page blank? That doesn't tell me much. Whatever happened to the freaks? You know, that Quran-burning Florida minister that wanted to come up here and demonstrate. Oh, that's going to be Good Friday, April 22nd. They're going to demonstrate at the Islamic Center of America. Jeez. These conservatives always causing hassles and problems and whatever.
Stay with your own little congregation of your family and friends. I think, how many are there? 80?
Yeah.
It's a very small congregation.
Then there are the freaks from New York that want to take out hate Muslim bus signs.
Yeah, those sweethearts, uh-huh.
A federal appeals court on Thursday threw out a ruling that the National Day of Prayer is unconstitutional. Every year, and you go back to the 50s when all this was put in, like, you know, in God or under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, which was written by a Christian socialist minister who could have put in it under God, but he didn't.
He didn't.
Because he knew this was a secular country.
Now, I believe it was the Catholics who got a hold of that, wasn't it?
The
Knights of Columbus.
Could very well have been, but it was very clearly the decision to insert under God into the pledge was done solely in terms of the Christian religion, when you go back and read the language there.
Yeah, it doesn't seem real fair. It doesn't seem real inclusive.
No,
right?
It doesn't. And again,
and then there's that little separation of church and state thing.
And also that the Constitution in the main body says that no religious test shall ever be required to hold public office.
And then that big thing called the Constitution, right?
Which, I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
Anyway, a three-judge panel of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the Madison, Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation...
We know those folks.
FFRF.org.
And they needed a sense of church and state.
Yes, it did not have standing to sue because while they disagree with the president's proclamation, it has not caused them any harm. The appeals court said hurt feelings differ from legal injury. Well, upholding the terms of the Constitution seems to be something that we would all suffer. And once those things are broken down, that's why you have to be so strict about these rulings. That's why you have to let the most obnoxious people, no matter where you're standing on the political spectrum, speak. No, and so many other things like that. Even if somebody is obviously guilty of a crime and the confession was tortured out of him, the confession has to be thrown out. Because government, whereas some people are saying, as we were talking before, want to have government carry out any number of legitimate functions, not being very, very strictly controlled, we know what happens, what governments do. 98% of governments have been awful, have only solely acted on behalf of the powerful and wealthy, the ruling class. And you're saying, wow. Getting a lot like that.
No. Sounds familiar. It describes something real close to home.
Some Republican state legislators are targeting Eastern Michigan University in the wake of its dismissal of a graduate student from a counseling program after she refused to counsel a gay student.
Oh, my gosh.
And
of course, because on basis of her own morality.
Her religion.
Oh.
A measure attached to an appropriations bill would require universities with accredited counseling programs to report back to lawmakers about how they plan to protect students' deeply held religious beliefs. Now, I mean, what if, you could think of any way that people's religion could interfere with their capacity to carry out their duties, like pharmacists that don't want to fulfill contraception.
Yeah, right.
A Muslim doctor that wouldn't want to do something forbidden by their religion, an Orthodox Jew who would, these people got to leave their stuff behind when they enter the secular world. Can you imagine being a distraught young gay man gay men and women who have a very high suicide rate because even though people are finally getting over it.
There's
still a lot of pressure, a lot of prejudice against gay kids. And they have a high suicide rate. So some distraught college student comes in and this right-wing freak says, I'm not going to counsel you.
Turns this person away. That's despicable.
She sued Eastern Michigan, saying she was dismissed because she declined to counsel a gay client looking for affirmation of his lifestyle. Yeah, I don't want to say you're a human being, too.
You're definitely second-class citizen and a sinner.
Yeah.
Well, there's a place called Affirmations in Ferndale. I implore him or her or anyone else to...
And I can't
stop on in there.
And get this. Here's the question that if this ridiculous legislation passes, the question will be asked of universities, what provisions will you be making this year and long term to protect Christian students from harassment and being dismissed from your programs of study for their religious beliefs?
That's absolutely insane, Peter.
Well, it's also unconstitutional. I mean,
then that little tidbit.
Final thing on religion. We ought to get to some other things. The cliche notwithstanding, there are atheists in foxholes. There's a group called Military Atheists and Secular Humanists, or MASH.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
And, the armed forces is just besotten with religious requirements. And they have these big religious programs in there and all that. I mean, that's... Okay, what else?
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, let's get back to demonstrations. Remember last weekend I was in New York City and I was in Union Square, the famous Union Square where there has been, I don't know, since it was erected 100 years ago, probably thousands of demonstrations. And yet there was one with thousands of people there and it didn't get a lot of play. Now here's what another group that we're very supportive of, fairness and accuracy in reporting. They have a little article called Stop Blacking Out Progressive Protests. Media focus on tiny Tea Party rally ignores anti-war march. Did you get this? Do you see this?
I don't think I got that one.
Okay. A sparsely attended Tea Party rally in Washington, D.C. on March 34th, first.
That's funny.
Yeah.
In support That's pretty much it.
They were supporting federal spending cuts, and they received incredible media attention. I mentioned that. At least on Slate, they joked there was at least one reporter for every three or four activists. So every time the teabaggers get out there, they get mighty amount of press.
Well, you know, yeah, and the media loves crazy.
Yeah. An anti-war rally in New York City on April 9th, the one I was at, was in some respects very similar. Protesters were speaking out on an equally timely issue, wars in Afghanistan and Libya, and connecting them to the budget and near-government shutdown in Washington. The difference, the ratio of activists to journalists. The anti-war protests had thousands of attendees. The teabagger rally with that whack job, Michelle Bachmann, had 300.
Oh, that's it? Wow.
Yeah. So you had several thousand at Union Square, 300 there. But the anti-war demonstration received almost zero corporate media coverage. According to the Nexus News database, the rally was apparently deemed not remotely newsworthy. The local New York Times didn't even cover it, though it did have time for the D.C. Tea Party rally. NPR's Morning Edition, the PBS NewsHour, reported on the Tea Party rally. I should read it the way it's written. Which also was also mentioned a few times on CNN and previewed on NBC's Today. They went up to 300 people. So fairness and accuracy in reporting, go to fair.org. What explains the wildly different treatment of the events, they asked. The organizers of the anti-war rally said they put serious resources into media outreach, held a press conference the day before the event, which was reportedly attended by one reporter from something called Russia Today.
I can't even believe that. Oh, God.
The rally was framed in, you know, the anti-war rally as a way to talk about war in the budget debate, so it's hard to argue that it wasn't timely or relevant. This isn't the first time they focused on the teabaggers, I say. In September 2009, a Tea Party march in Washington attracted tens of thousands of participants. That was the whack job Beck who just finally they blew him off even of Fox News. He was too crazy for them. So it attracted tens of thousands of participants. So did a gay rights march the following month in October of 2009, and it elicited far less attention. They're being kind. I bet you there's not one in a thousand of you who isn't gay listening that even knew this occurred.
Right.
2010 June, media demonstrated almost no interest in the Progressive U.S. Social Forum. All of you know where that was held, right? The U.S. Social Forum, where 20,000 people attended. Where in the world, in what city in the United States? It was in Detroit. It actually got a little play in the Detroit News and Free Press. They had some, you know, like literally 200-word articles.
Yeah, it was a huge event here.
Yeah. A tiny Tea Party convention in Nashville earlier in the year was widely covered. They had more media people there for the teabaggers than they had participants. 2,000 protesters marched. I didn't even know this. 2,000 protesters marched on the Washington offices of the Koch brother industry on April 5th to protest the brothers' funding of an array of right-wing interest groups. Few media were on hand to cover the event. I didn't even know it happened.
Yeah, I didn't know that happened either.
Yeah.
At all.
Oh, and this weekend, how many of you saw that? Finally, we're wondering, where's Sarah Palin?
Oh, she's...
So she showed up, the carpetbagger.
She's back.
You know what a carpetbagger is? That was a term they had all during. That was from like the Civil War, and these people went down the Southerners because it was occupied by federal troops. So like I think like 1878, wasn't that it? That so for quite a few years, and after the Civil War, like 13 years after the Civil War, and so a lot of the Southerners, I don't know how much, there must be some truth to this, came south with their stuff in a carpet bag. You imagine that, like a kind of a carpet material with a couple of handles.
Yeah.
So she's like a carpetbagger besides being a tea bagger.
She's a whole lot of baggage, that's for sure. And so she showed up at this
Madison rally.
Yes.
Yeah. And yesterday. Everywhere. So she comes out of nowhere. I mean, she knows how to run a state, right? She quits in the middle of her term and all that.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't know how many of you saw that. Oh, I meant to get the audio up on this. I don't know how many of you saw that. But they showed her talking, and she was saying, "We stand for Governor Walker. We are." What had happened, though, there was about 6,500 people there. 1,000 teabaggers and 5,500 people
protesting her.
Protesting her, chanting, "Go home, go home."
I love it. Yeah.
And you saw that, didn't you?
Yes.
You did.
No, I saw it, but it was on a progressive news feed somewhere.
Yeah.
It wasn't in the mainstream media by any means. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that gives you an idea of...
pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. So... Okay.
Yeah, it really was a wash. She didn't, I don't know, I think really people are, and, you know, maybe some people in Wisconsin, because of all this, who weren't already on the best side of things, are maybe kind of thinking about things and coming over to a better side.
Well, one of the things that I said, hey, is there finally some justice in the world? By the way, if you want to call, 313-298-WRIF, and there's only one line left. We already have Mike and Lonnie and Greg and Adam waiting, and... Sarah and Athena are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF. I said, well, at least there's some justice in Wisconsin that people got out and voted in this progressive Supreme Court justice. As soon as I got home, I started getting the news from some of you folks. And you can always email Jalene and me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And turned out, guess what?
Recount.
Not even a recount. They're a Republican, this didn't come out too well. But guess what? A Republican in charge of the votes in one county found 7,500 more votes.
That's right. They kept finding...
for the Republican.
Oh, my God.
7,500 more.
So what is going on with
that? So the Republicans won, right? They out of a hat.
It's over?
Yeah. Well, they may ask for a recount.
That's what I thought.
Now, here, on one hand, this sounds like another election that the Republicans stole. I mean, George Bush stole the one in 2000. He stole the one in 2004. And I don't want to argue about it. Just if you don't agree with me or you think this is a weird statement, go to Bush stole election. See what you get on Google. All right.
You'll get a lot. He's plan on spending some time.
One of the many awful, evil, anti-democratic, pro-corporate, pro-wealthy things that Republicans do is they want to reduce the size of the electorate. The less people that vote, the better they do. And as we see in the midterm elections, all these Republicans say, we're here doing what the American people wanted us to do. Well, the American people didn't show up hardly, and they didn't show up in Wisconsin. They expected 20% of the electorate to show up to vote for this Supreme Court justice position in Wisconsin, and instead 30%. And everybody said, man, I can't believe we turned out. Well, if you only get that kind of turnout, they can't steal they can steal the election. So that there has to be massive turnout. That's why Barack Obama won, because there was the biggest turnout in years and years. If there would have been a small turnout the way there frequently is, like half or under, there would have been, we would have been talking about Sarah Palin because she would have been the vice president.
Oh.
One heartbeat away from the presidency. Well, we didn't even get to some of the other things. We know who the banksters are, literally the bank gangsters. They've been named by Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, and who is Tom Coburn, a Republican of Oklahoma. A lot of stuff going on, abortion wars, the debt plan. We even got to that. But like you folks look like you want to talk, okay? You want to talk?
Let the people speak, people.
Are you talking to me? Here's Lonnie in Detroit. Lonnie, it's Peter and Jelena, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening to both of you.
Hi.
I'm a Detroit resident, and I'm upset about this prayer march because this is one of the problems that we have financially. Churches are not taxed. And we have so many churches in this city, and the preachers of these mega churches are acting as if they're the Sanhedrin. Some of them, one of them is on the board of the retirement fund for the police and fire. He's also the president of the NAACP. He's a power broker.
I know that man. He's a great speaker, isn't he?
$55 million, and it's built up on, I guess, poor working class people. They're getting property, commercial and industrial property, at cut rate prices. They don't pay taxes. They don't spur any type of economic development around their church other than the building itself. They're talking about God as the answer.
Now, I hear you. It's, I mean, there's a role they can play, and what they should have been working on was getting people out for that economic march on April 4th that would have affected, I mean, they could have, I mean, Jesus was there. I mean, there was a prayer vigil on April 4th, and they could have brought them all to that and talk about having your cake and eat it too. It would have worked. Instead, they're just saying, you know, we're going to pray to God to make Detroit great again. Well.
My voting precinct had been changed from a public school to a church, and the reason they gave was that because they're closing so many schools, they have to find new voting precincts. Well, the last two schools that had to vote for a president, so all the way back to the first Bush presidency, they're still open. And before that, it was a Ask Me local that had the voting precinct. So all these places are still open. But this one particular church, they remodeled it. And I know the preachers are getting all of these benefits as if this is a theocracy.
Well, that's what's beginning to happen, Lonnie. I mean, that those boundaries between church and state are beginning to erode. Well, I share your anger. I appreciate your call. Thank you for calling us. Now, we've only taken one call. Mike and Greg and Adam and Todd, you hang on, and we'll be right back. In fact, we just got
We have open lines.
We got a couple for you. And we'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Yes. Anniversary concert, Stone Temple Pilots, live. This Wednesday at the Fillmore Detroit, celebrate 40 years of WRIF with Stone Temple Pilots, plus special guest Taddy Porter, and the reunion of Toby Red featuring Chad Smith on 420. Go figure. The show is completely sold out, so keep it on 101 The Riff to score your free tickets and more.
WRIF's 40th anniversary concert. Brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Presented by Live Nation and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm gonna shoot you right down. Let all your feet.
All right, welcome back to the Night Call. Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. You knew that last singer was?
No.
You're cutting your blues throat, as we used to say.
Yeah.
Detroit's own John Lee Hooker.
Oh, sounds good.
Boom, boom, yeah. Anyways, the Knob Creek Gun Range in West Point, Kentucky advertises its world-famous twice-a-year machine gun shoot as family-friendly entertainment.
Woo! The slogan, let's go. Come on, kids. Let's go shoot some guns.
Nothing brings families together like blowing stuff apart safely.
Yeah, listen, little Johnny.
I want, and I don't
running away from the crowd.
This is from Media Matters. I think you just go to MediaMatters.com or org. So I don't know who the person is. I don't deny the red-blooded American joy of firing automatic weapons at exploding targets. Still, I have to ask, what's up with little kids in Nazi shirts? I was on site at the Knob Creek machine gun shoot fewer than 20 minutes last Saturday before I passed a shaved head lad with a Totenkopf death head on his chest. The Totenkopf was the symbol of the Nazi SS division that ran death camps like Auschwitz during the Holocaust. The shirt looked brand new. I took that to mean the kid or whoever gave it to him bought it from one of the dozen or so permitted vendors who openly sold white supremacist merchandise.
My God.
This included a wide selection of T-shirts and flags bearing symbols popular with racist skinheads and neo-Nazis. And no, I'm not even counting Confederate battle flags. Also for sale were race war fantasy novels, which I will not give any publicity to, including ones from notorious hate groups. A Friends of the NRA fundraising booth was located within sight of a stall of swastika flags.
That is horrible. And all these parents allow their kids to wear that? Well, clearly the parents are racist themselves.
Could be.
Yule wrote in and he said, and we will get to it during the show, but he said, what about Donald Trump and his fake presidential campaign? Plus, Trump's refusal to acknowledge Reagan as the worst president ever. He said it has pissed him off a lot, too.
Yeah, I don't, and he's going to announce the Donald. Being in New York City.
Yeah, that he wants to run for president. He's going to announce it on The Apprentice.
The finale.
Such a joke.
Yeah. Well, we had an actor 1980 to 1988.
But he's not even an actor. A reality show, but he's just a billionaire.
Let's go back to our phones. Some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, Mike from Clyde Township. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Hey, I was just wondering what you think it's going to take to get a viable third party that's not going to be controlled by the Republicans or Democrats to let people understand there's a class warfare, and right now we're losing because they're sucking us dry.
I think it's going to take a vast mass movement that's not here yet. But things are structured in such a way as to give dominance to these two parties because, I should have saved that. I got an email from a progressive blogger who said that she can no longer, and I hear this from people frequently, I'm not trying to argue about it but either, that they just can't deal with voting for the Democrats and the Republicans. But what's going to happen? To me, Obama's been so far pretty much of a failure in terms of progressive goals. So you have the election, and it's going to either be Barack Obama or Donald Trump, or Barack Obama or Sarah Palin. Well, we get blackmailed into voting for Obama.
Lesser of the two evils.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, because the one's so scary, you'd rather have the other.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you know who Noam Chomsky is?
No.
Check him. It sounds like somebody you would like.
N-O-A-M.
Well, S. What am I talking about? C-H-O-M-S-K-Y. C-H-O-M-S-K-Y. He says, I always vote for the lesser of the two evils. He said, who would want the greater?
I mean,
Then there's an opposite slogan when people are going to vote for the Green Party president, for a socialist candidate or something like that. Their slogan is better to vote for something you want and not get it than to vote for something you don't want and get it.
Yeah.
I've always thought none of the above would be an appropriate box.
Well, as I said, though, the Republicans depend on a low voter turnout in order to propel themselves.
And they get it.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the reasons there's such a low turnout is that people feel that there's not a great enough difference. There's probably more difference now between the Democrats and the Republicans than there's been in history. I mean, they have arisen as a far right-wing party. I mean, some of the conservative parties in Europe, for instance, like the potentially conservative party of Sarkozy in France, or of what's it? Well, hello, Brain Cameron, is that the prime minister in in England? I should know these things. They would probably be in the Democratic Party in the United States, and the kind of people that are the rank and file, and a lot of the politicians are the ones that are in like neo-fascist parties in Europe. I mean, for real. And yeah, that's because politics in this country are so skewed to the right. But anyways, thank you, Mike. It's a great question.
Pete wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and said, Trump spoke at a teabagger rally. He said he hates to say it, but he sounded pretty good. I hate Republicans with a passion, he says, but he made some good points. Wish you could have seen it. You guys rock! don't let him fool you, Pete.
Well, you know, who else?
He's slick.
You know who really sounds good is Jesse Ventura. In fact,
but he's real. He's getting real nutty, though, isn't he?
Well, the nuttier gets, the more sense he makes. In some ways, I was listening to some radio show. Who was interviewing him?
I think he's bagging out.
No, he's not down.
Are you
today.
Sure?
Okay. You know, there's another guy who the former Senator Rick Santorum.
Yeah,
and he was a senator from Pennsylvania. He got a lot of weird. Wasn't he? There was something about he was talking about man on dog.
Yeah, he was a real
gay baiter and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Right.
So anyway, here, this is it. He's running for president despite his Google problem, whatever that is. And fresh out of the gate, he has already invited more mockery. His campaign website features the slogan, "Fighting to make America, America again." As some liberals have noted, "Let America Be America Again" is the title of a poem by Langston Hughes, an avowed leftist who was probably gay, and the poem obviously does not reflect the Santorum agenda.
That is fabulous.
Yeah, because Santorum is not a very good politician, he allowed himself to be tripped up by a student who asked him about how his campaign slogan was written by a gay, black, pro-union leftist poet.
I love it. Oh, I would have applauded had I been there.
Here, and it says, Santorum, by and large, stayed on message, was tripped up a bit, but this is a quote from the article. When a student asked him if he knew that his choice of his slogan, "Fighting to make America, America again," was borrowed from the pro-union poem by the gay poet Langston Hughes. Santorum said, "No, I had nothing to do with that. I didn't know that. And the folks who worked on that slogan for me didn't inform me that it came from that, if in fact it came from that."
Oh, my gosh.
So who would you vote for? Right, the Republicans and the Democrats are the same. Barack Obama or this freak of nature? The student, whose name was not immediately available,
to figure that one out.
Was referring to the poem by Hughes. When asked a short time later what the campaign slogan meant to him, Santorum said, "Well, I'm not too sure that's my campaign slogan. I think it's on a website." Yeah, like yours, you freak.
Yeah.
It's also printed on the campaign literature handed out before his speech. These guys, I mean, they're hysterical.
I mean, they really are hysterical.
Except they may have us by the cojones,
They do.
You know, they do in Michigan with these laws that have been passed in Wisconsin and Ohio. All right, here is let's see. Here's Greg in Auburn Hills. Hey, Greg, you're on the air. Welcome, Greg.
Hello. How you doing?
We're
Hi,
good.
Greg.
I just want to say one thing.
Hey, Greg, do me this. Turn your radio completely off, okay? Because we're getting a feedback from you. There you go. Did you turn yourself completely off?
He turned himself off.
Dude. Oh,
okay.
Oh, you're lying.
Right. We'll let you come back on.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Someone was on here about why we were talking about conservatives too badly, but you know.
And I'm getting really sick of guys named Todd.
Geez.
You know, yeah, it's just a goofy name, okay?
Hi, what's your name?
Todd. Here, Todd from Southfield. We haven't been blessed with the right-wing cab driver from
Southgate. Isn't it Southgate? Yeah.
Yeah, South. Yeah, did I say Southfield?
You did.
Yeah, that's too liberal a town for you.
My two favorite middle-aged angry white guys. How are you doing?
Guys?
Guys? Hey, last I looked, I still have the vajayjay.
Wait, what are you going to say?
That's a debate for another show. However, Peter.
Hey, wait.
That's terrible.
Was he insulting? You want me to hang up on him?
Yes. Goodbye. Well, no, I'm serious.
Okay, you know what?
That was really bad.
I didn't even hear what he said.
He said that's a debate for another show.
Oh, okay.
And I said, last I checked, I still have the lady parts.
Oh, okay. I missed all that.
You know, I want to say something about that. This is a typical woman hater who cannot deal with a woman who has a brain. I feel better. Give us a call, 313-298-WRIF.
I peeked in at my wife watching Sex in the City Part 2 or something like, you know, the movie?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I have seen it.
When they're in that bar in Abu Dhabi singing I Am Woman? I got to say, that was pretty good.
Entertaining.
But I can't even remember what actually he even wanted to talk about.
I don't think it matters.
You know what? You know, this is never mind, I shouldn't say that.
Let's move along.
All right. Let's go to Chris. Chris is in Dearborn Heights. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
What's up, bro?
How you doing?
Pretty good. What do you think of Donald Trump throwing out the birther issue?
Well, it's called raw meat. You know, raw meat for the animals. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it smacks of certain racism. In fact, I would say that's really it at its core.
The issue. Mean, yeah. What do you think? I want to know what you think.
Me personally?
Yeah.
I believe Barack Obama is a birth child, or a love child, excuse me.
You do? So, I mean, if he was, so what?
What do you mean a love child?
You know, that means he's not married.
A love child, in other words, he's actually an American citizen. However, his birth certificate doesn't have the same last name as his parents.
You know, I can't remember where that's up, but, you know, whatever.
Who cares?
All he's got to be is an American citizen.
Every day?
Yeah. You know, that was, what do you call it? Who's the lead singer of The Temptations? Or not The Temptations.
You mean
the
Diana
Supremes.
Ross.
It's Diana Ross. Didn't she have a song called Love
she
Child?
She did.
Yeah.
She does.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what I believe.
Maybe she was singing about him.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Is this a bad thing? Does this mean he shouldn't be the president of the United States because he was, I didn't know this, married out of wedlock?
No.
What is it?
That his parents, I don't think it's so, but what if he was? That's what
is that?
Well, no, that's the whole point, is that he is an American citizen.
Yeah.
However, his father is from a different.
Was it Kenny?
Versus, he's not, excuse me. His birth certificate and his father's name are two different things.
Well, I don't know. Someone who maybe knows about it. But, you know, and I've talked about this before, most people trace things through the mother, matrilineal. So, like, you're...
I'm confused.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Let me go ahead.
The Maury Povich show.
Yeah. So, it's matrilineal. You trace things through the mother. So, for instance, you're Jewish if your mother was Jewish.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
If your mother was a Gentile and your father was a Jew, you're a Gentile. And same thing. But people tend, like, I know a good friend of ours, two good friends of ours who you know, who her father was Mexican American and her mother was Irish, and another person, her father was Lebanese and the mother was Irish.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would think both of them would be Irish, right? Because matrilineal through the mother, and they always say, you know, mama baby, papa maybe. You know, yeah. I mean, nowadays you can trace it a little better with DNA and all that. But that's
and,
why.
And the help of Maury Povich.
Yes. So the point being is that given that, Barack Obama not only is a citizen, but he's white.
Right.
Right. Okay. End of story.
I mean, you know, I think that these.
We don't know that this guy was his father, but we know who his mother was.
These birthers are insane.
Yeah.
And to think that as anyone would ever have even begin to think about running for president if they knew deep down that they weren't a citizen of the United States is ridiculous.
I'll fool them.
Yeah, right. I'll fool the entire world.
Yeah, right. Okay. God. But, you know, actually, when I talk that about, when I say that about Barack Obama, when there's prejudice against a racial minority or a racial group or an ethnic group, to not accept that as the dominant definition, I don't know. I mean, you kind of have to. So if you're half, you have a white mother and a black father, you're black. If you have a Lebanese father and an Irish mother, you're Lebanese. If, you know, like that.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know.
I don't know.
You know what? It really doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't.
Whatsoever.
Free to be you and me.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, let's take some more calls. Here's Wendy in Shelby Township. Hey, Wendy, you're on the air.
Oh, click that little.
Oh, yeah. You mean I got to actually click this button to get her on the air? I'll get the knack of this one of these days. Go ahead, Wendy, you're on the air.
Hi there. I love your show. Thank you for taking my call. Just something bothered me, and I had to give you a call. A couple callers back, you were talking about how Obama is the lesser of two evils, and that just... Now, as a progressive, that just really bothered me. Someone who campaigned for Obama 40 hours a week. And don't get me wrong, I disagree with a lot, and I criticize the president. But to say he's the lesser of the evils, I'm curious as to what you think, what progressive legislation you think he can pass with a Republican House.
I hear you, but you know there was a little period for a couple of years when he had a Democratic Congress as well.
Lieberman hardly gave us a majority.
Well, you know what, and you probably have seen any number of these. In fact, I was trying to find this quickly. That you know, they talk about Barack Obama missing in action. I mean, where is this guy when he's needed?
That's from the New York Times. We're also talking about the wars and how he's increased Afghanistan significantly. And
he agreed to. I mean, he should have gone to the mat with this thing with the taxes, because now he's agreed to these almost $40 billion in cuts, which I'll talk about in a little while, which are devastating to the environment, to the elderly, to disabled, to any number of other things. But what he should have done was, remember, that was the Republican deal. You've got to continue the Bush tax cuts to the wealthy, which created the problem of not enough revenue in the first place, because then that's the only way they would agree, the Republicans, to continue it for the middle class. He should have just gone to the wall with that. And you know what? They would have backed down. And you know what he should have said? He should have said, there is no deficit problem. There are two problems. One, the wars that Bush had begun that I continued and I'm going to end them. And secondly, that the revenue that has been denied the United States because of the Bush tax cut are being they're being ended right now, and he had the opportunity also at the time, because remember, that was during the lame duck period at the end of last year, when he still could have said, hey, no, just big no.
Right, and I totally agree. Just one more quick point,
sure.
Jillian, you just said about Afghanistan. I personally went to 3 Obama rallies when he was campaigning to be president, and in every single one, he said, Afghanistan is where we should be.
That's right.
And we were aware of it as progressives. We knew where he was going to go.
Well,
I just didn't think he would do it as much as he has.
I did.
I did not at all.
Yeah. And,
call me crazy.
I know. We all had big dreams and big hopes, and it was going to be this beautiful progressive country, but he has... He did pass health care.
He's done a lot of great things. We have a whole list of things that we go through every once in a while.
And why, for instance, he didn't show up in Madison, why he didn't pick up the cudgel of the middle class and the working class in this country and say, this shall not pass, is almost unforgivable. Because some people have said he's waiting until his second term. And the Republicans have such a pack of lame balls in the pipeline that, I mean, I think he's almost a certain shoo-in. So we'll see. And also, I think that the American people are horrified what happened in 2010 by not going to the polls. So it could very well be that the Democrats will get back in power. But, you know, the Democratic Party itself, I mean, I think has some deep problems. But they could all be solved if we were not relying on them to pass progressive legislation, but rather that we began a mass movement of historic proportions that literally demanded. I mean, if you think about, like, for instance, maybe the best example is, well, either the union movement of the 30s or the civil rights movement of the 50s and the 60s, a wealthy man becomes president, Roosevelt, and he says, whoa, you know, there's going to be a revolution here unless I get some, you know, pro-people, pro-worker, pro-union legislation in. And a southern racist like Lyndon Johnson says, all of a sudden, he famously, quoting the civil rights anthem, says, "We shall overcome." And he did it only and because he knew that the consequences would be so great to deny people that. So that's what's needed. Okay, Wendy, thank you so much. I think we're going to take a quick break. Greg and Tristan and Carrie, hang on and pick up some of these open lines at 313-298-W. Well, let's let Mr. Announcer give it.
Do it.
That's what we pay him for.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We met through an online dating service. A perfect match.
We had everything in common.
Even our car insurance.
We both have e-surance because we both love discounts.
We had a little scare, though, because I got all my e-surance discounts over the phone.
And I got all mine on their website.
But we realized it didn't matter how we got our discounts.
As long as we both had them.
To get your perfect car insurance discounts, get a quote today at esurance.com or 1-800-ESURANCE. Esurance, technology when you want it, people when you don't.
Not available in all states. Some restrictions apply. Discounts may vary by state. See site for details.
I love your eyes.
Yes. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Our second hour starting a little early. It's not even midnight. 3 to 4 inches of snow expected here in Detroit. Isn't that sweet? Well, Todd is officially banned from. Jolene has banned Todd because of his sexist and insulting remark.
Yeah, I'm over it.
You know what? You know, people have different fuses.
Now, sometimes we lift the ban.
Yeah, he could be lifted.
You're in a ban.
A year or two.
Yeah.
You're back in. And you can almost say anything to me, but
say anything to me too. That's just I'm not putting up with it tonight. I'm not in the mood.
Okay, call next week.
I don't know. It's Easter. I'm not sure that we're broadcasting.
Oh, maybe not. Isn't he the first person we've ever banned?
Yeah, I think so. I just started this. Yeah, this is my new thing.
That's good. That's good.
It's like defriending on Facebook.
So here's what Obama agreed to in this deficit spending plan that was passed this last week. $38 billion in cuts. He shouldn't have agreed to a single one. And there's more. Here's what they cut. $500 million. They cut money for food inspections, food programs for poor women and children cut by, oh no, money for food inspections cut only slightly. Food program for poor women and children cut by $500 million.
Oh.
I mean,
yeah, let's make the women and children suffer.
I should get Wendy. I should get you back on the air.
This probably makes Todd happy.
Yeah, yeah, right. Let's see. There's a number of other things. Spending on energy efficiency was cut by $438 million, almost $500 million. Well, why not? Because when you're being paid by the Koch brothers, the energy giants, why wouldn't the Republicans want this?
Sure.
Authority to use $300 million in seized assets to fight crime was removed. Why in the world would they want to do that? These are all Republican things. How about this? Grants to local emergency responders were cut by $750 million.
So, hey, when you make that call, just cross your fingers.
Yeah, yeah. A pair of long-standing clean water grant funds would lose almost $1 billion. Clean water, who wants that?
Yeah, you know, we can get that bottled water that really isn't that clean anyway.
$600 million was cut from community health care centers, $390 million from low-income energy assistant grants. So let those poor elderly people just sit in their heatless homes next winter or this winter.
Yep.
I mean, and there is absolutely no need to cut the budget whatsoever. What is needed to you can either reallocate funds, like we don't need the world's largest military by a factor of, I don't know how much, but it's way beyond what we actually, I think I even have something on that here. Or tax the rich. Everybody wants to tax the rich. In fact, that's what Obama said in the speech that he gave later in the week, mm-hmm. saying this was part of his plan. But
now,
I didn't
hear the speech, but I heard that he actually kind of got a little bit.
Yeah, he got in the face of the Republic because one of the things, and Wendy, I would address this to you and other progressives, why doesn't he realize that on most of these issues about finances, the majority of the American people do not support an attack on working people, middle class, elderly, disabled, children, all of that. All of that, the punitive budget that these Republicans have put forth. Community development grants were cut by nearly $1 billion, and $3 million in high-speed rail money. $3 million only? Yeah. So, you know, that's just part of it. I mean, and why he would agree to any of that is absolutely beyond me. Let's get Tristan from Dearborn on the air. Welcome. 313-298-WRIF is our number. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air, sir.
Hey, Peter, Jolene, how y'all doing tonight?
Hi.
Hey, great, how are you?
I'm doing good. I actually got a couple things, you know. The first one is, with Donald Trump supposedly coming out saying that he's running for president and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think that personally we could do worse. I mean, we have done worse, but I mean,
There was Bush.
Or there was Reagan.
There was Reagan.
there
was Nixon.
Yeah, right.
There was Hoover. There was Coolidge.
We could go on and on.
He's going to fall right in there with them.
Yeah. Republicans had a good president. Let's not take it away from them. Lincoln. all bad since then.
Yeah, but that's just my personal belief.
So what do you think? I'm curious what you think, what you like about Donald Trump. I'm dying to know what people like about this guy.
You know what? I have no clue.
So there you go. There's my answer.
He's on TV.
It's okay to like him, and it's okay to like his show. But liking him as for the president of the United States, especially when you have nothing to base it on, get a little more.
We're doing him such a favor, Tristan, because
by talking about
by talking about
him. Everyone's going to, and you know, and people want to talk about it, so we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Fine.
But
don't vote for him if he gets in there.
I think maybe it'll wind up Obama won't run, and it'll be Trump against Jesse Ventura.
Oh my God!
Hello, I'm moving 10 miles south to Windsor.
Me too. What a freak show!
The second thing is, for the guy that called up here earlier, I believe his name was Todd.
Yeah.
Who? I don't know what you mean, but go ahead.
He's just one of those few people that are freaked out by women with power.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tristan.
Tristan, who loves you?
Yeah, who loves you?
You can call every week.
okay. Actually, there's so many things to talk about. Some open lines, right? 313-298-WRIF. This is pretty important. Better, you know, more important than Donald Trump.
Because there's a lot more.
It's so funny. I keep using the same phrase, but freak to describe these right-wing Republicans that have somehow or other been able to slip out from under, let me put it another way, from away the from the far margins of this society into the mainstream and actually have political power. Now, weeks after he was sworn in as governor of Maine, Paula Page, a Tea Party favorite, announced a 63-point plan to cut environmental regulations.
Yeah, that's right. That's in their dreams. They dream about this stuff.
Now, this is kind of hard, you know, to think of all by yourself. But I think, and I just wrote this down from memory. I think he got elected by only 38% of the vote of the people that voted. Mm. So he, you know, there's a lot of other parties running. It includes opening 3 million acres of the North Woods for development and suspending a law meant to monitor toxic chemicals that could be found in children's products.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
What other word other than freak should I use?
Evil. That's,
I mean,
really,
these people are like really crazy
and heartless.
Yeah, another Tea Party ally. Let's call
ally.
It. Yeah. Governor Rick Scott of Florida has proposed eliminating millions of dollars in annual outlays for land conservation, as well as cutting to $17 million, the $50 million allocated in last year's budget for the restoration of the dwindling Everglades. Mm. This was a deal that was like a couple of decades in creating, and they finally allocated this money to buy up property, get rid of these sugar companies or mills or something down there. Was that what it was? And they were going to try to save this in, you know, the whole like bottom part of Florida is the Everglades.
It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
An incredible habitat, and it has to do with clean drinking water and all that. And North Carolina, where Republicans won control of both houses of the legislature for the first time in 140 years, leaders recently proposed a budget that would cut operating funds to the Department of Environment and Natural Resources by almost a quarter. In the past month, the nation's focus has been on the budget battle in Washington, where Republicans in Congress aligned with the Tea Party have fought hard for rollbacks to the Environmental Protection Agency. Get this. I mean, the language of it. They're trying to fight against the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to project this. Clean air and water regulations also. Renewable energy, don't want that, and other conservation programs. But similar efforts to make historical large cuts to environmental programs are also in play at the state level, and that's what's going on. The Maine governor, LePage, summed up the dislike while defending his programs in a radio address. Maine's working families and small businesses are endangered. It is time we start defending the interests of those who want to work and invest in Maine with the same vigor that we defend tree frogs.
Peter, this is the same guy. Wasn't it the same guy with the
the mural?
The switchblade?
Oh, yeah. That they introduced legislation that would allow one-armed people
to use switchblades.
To possess switchblades, which would have been, if you think, maybe we should have kept him off on that stuff rather than he would start, you know, fighting the environment. Oh, there's more.
Yeah, right.
The strategies of the Republicans have been similar across the affected states. Cut budgets and personnel at regulatory agencies, prevent the issuing of new regulations, roll back land conservation, and if possible, eliminate planning boards that monitor, restrict, or permit building development.
Oh my gosh.
In New Jersey, for example, Tea Party favorite Governor Chris Christie has said the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act, which preserves more than 800,000 of open land that supplies drinking water to more than half of New Jersey's residents, is an infringement on property rights.
Gosh, these people are absolutely criminal.
They are.
You know, they don't care about any type of harm to the people, cancer rates or any
of that. All of that. Yeah, asthma, all of that.
Ecosystems being balanced. I mean.
And here's the deal. If you're unaware enough that you're not involved in the fight to protect the interests of yourself, your family, your neighbors, your community, your city, your state, and you're going to wind up with teachers laid off and you know, first responders being cut back and your city open 4 days a week and your libraries being closed. Okay, you know what? You'll probably still live. Even if you don't have a job, even if your house is foreclosed, you will live. You will survive. But the environment.
It might not be pretty.
Yeah, the environment. I mean, so that's your option. If you want to just let your lives go down the drain, but you will stay alive as a human being because the lords of the land and the economy have to maintain us at least as a peasantry as they, you know, slash our wages and what have you. But once the environment is gone, it's gone. I mean, I know the saying, nature bats last. And we see that in Japan.
But
what occurs to nature is not restorable. I mean, as we see. In Florida, Governor Scott is asked to cut staff members to 40 from 358 at the Department of Community Affairs, which regulates land use and was created to be control unchecked urban sprawl. So he's going to get rid of, what about this stuff about, Lane Wright, a spokesman for Governor Scott, said the cuts would enable businesses to grow again in Florida. The governor does care about the environment, but feels it's more important to get people back to work She's going to lay off 318 people at the Department of Community Affairs.
Right, and just, you know, plute, plute, plute. So we're looking the other way.
So here's the deal. If you have to, all this does create costs for businesses. If you, listen, they used to just burn everything openly. They used to throw all the crap just in the water. They, how much has been despoiled? They used to put PCBs in the Hudson River, you know, in New York, everything under the sun. And it was only through the regulations. I was saying how bad Nixon was. He was the one that signed the Environmental Protection Act legislation, the Clean Water Act, and all of that, because we realized that we were spoiling the nest. And these people, some of them are just half crazy. Or some of them are all crazy, some of them are half crazy, and some of them are just total whores for the rich. So, I mean, why wouldn't a big energy company say, yes, we're good corporate citizens, and we want to put in, we want to have zero, what's the word, not zero pollution, well, that's good enough, zero pollution, that's not the phrase, though. Zero discharge.
Yeah.
Zero discharge, instead of, you know, dumping things into the air around here and around our town, dumping stuff into all our lakes and what have you. Why wouldn't they want to do that? Because they can make more money for their stockholders if they don't have to have these pesky regulations prohibiting them from doing exactly what harms the planet and harms all of its inhabitants. So I'm going to erase it. They're all crazy. They are just a pack of freaks.
They really are.
Anybody want to defend them?
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck.
I'd like to hear that.
People want to talk about Donald Trump, though.
Okay, well,
Frank and Chuck, too.
I told you. That's what people like. All right. Want to talk about it.
We'll talk about
the Trumpster.
I was in New York last week, and everywhere you go, there's a Trump Tower.
Oh, yeah, he owns.
Yeah, he owns a lot.
He owns a lot.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Brought himself up by his own bootstraps. Or was his family rich? I think his family was rich.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't. You will never catch me reading one of Donald Trump's books.
313-298-WRIF, which is
313-298-9743, which I think is more important than ever to announce, because when you look at your cell phones, it's not like the old phones where you could see the...
Oh, yeah, they don't have letters on it, do they?
Yeah, I mean, there's one each individual for...
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it used to be like Broadway 76441 or University 961908.
I went to call my DSL provider, and it was 1-800, you know, and then I couldn't figure it out. I had to go to the website.
But that's interesting because the 313-298-WRIF is the contest line. Here.
I know, but I think people here in Detroit, 40 years of RIF, they just know the number.
Is it 9743? Is that it? I'm right. I can never remember it. I don't have my cheat sheet.
I just said it.
Yeah, well, still. Here's Frank in Ann Arbor who wants to talk about the Donald. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the air.
Oh, Peter.
Oh, yeah. I've just got to click the button. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the air.
How are you guys doing tonight?
We're good.
Great. How are you?
Oh, great. Just driving home, long night of work.
Oh,
I was just wondering what the big deal about things are. Like, why, it seems like you guys are just calling one thing after another, like, Republican, Democrat. Like, I feel like that's the biggest problem in America right now, is that we all need to just not care about whether a Democrat or Republican, Tea Party, whatever your name is. I feel like we should just be all Americans and try to do what's best. I feel like Donald Trump knows how to make money and knows how to allocate money, what you were talking about earlier. I feel like we need somebody that's not a politician that's bought time after time, election after election.
Oh, he's a politician. He is a politician. Would you not agree, Peter?
Yeah, I think he is. And, you know, the whole idea that we get somebody from the outside and all that, and the guy knows how to run a business. Actually, he's had a lot, and they had a lot of bankruptcies and
he has.
And all that. And
He's had one, but so is half the state of Michigan because of Jennifer Granholm.
Do you think Jennifer Granholm did this?
Really?
Tell me how Jennifer Granholm bankrupted the state.
Both my parents lost their jobs in the education system because of her educational cuts. Through just the teaching cuts and...
I don't know. You know, the cuts are... The big cuts are now coming under...
Snyder,
who is cutting...
It was actually halfway a little more okay under her. It was a little more okay under her.
Yeah, I don't know. Did Granholm... What cuts? I don't remember education cuts under Granholm. Maybe they were. What were they?
There was a, I understand that my mom was in career planning, and she lost her job right when Jennifer Granholm, 2 years after Jennifer Granholm's second term.
Well, you know, well, for one thing.
2 years after her second term? Okay.
Okay. There is, you know, the state, because of the deindustrialization, which she had nothing to do with. And a lot of the tax problems came about because of, what's his name, who was the governor before. I mean, I don't have any reason to defend Jennifer Granholm. Yeah, Engler. Because, you know, these tax cuts to business that he put in. And now Snyder wants even more tax cuts. And this has led to the you know, to incredible layoffs throughout the school system. And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse.
And I can answer the other part. You know, why do we talk about Democrat, Republican, the baggers? That's because that's how it is. That's,
yeah.
That's what's going on, and that's the news.
I don't want to spend my time defending the Democrats.
Right.
I mean, I think that they are an unfortunate choice that we're saddled with because mm-hmm. we, the people, have never made alternatives. If it's going to come to a governor and a legislature that's going to attack the standard of living of the average middle-class person, well, then I guess I'm left with the Democrats and the rest of us are. If we can't build an alternative movement with a vision that goes beyond everything we have now, we're going to be stuck with what we have. And you know what's going to happen in 2012? People are going to say, oh, yeah, we better get out there and get rid of the Republicans because they've screwed everything up and they've attacked us. And then things won't get any better. And then in 2014, they'll say, well, man, the Democrats, they didn't meet up to my expectations. I'm staying home. And the Republicans will get back in. So we're going to be on that merry-go-round forever.
Yeah, it's this roller coaster merry-go-round.
Unless we stop getting off, for one thing, stop getting off personalities and start voting for policy. I mean, that's important. I mean, I shouldn't say it. The Republicans have a policy. They want to bring capitalism and state rule back to the way it's mostly been throughout the history of this country. I mean, there was this period, there was this golden age, probably maybe from, actually I'm stealing all this, I'm not even going to attribute right now, from like 1950 to 1980. The real force of the New Deal of the, what had been enacted during the 1930s came to fruition. And, after World War II, there was, you know, this great expansion of the middle class, unions were strong, they created a high wage standard, or a general standard of living, with a lot of benefits that were, you know, mirrored even for non-union people and businesses. And then with Ronald Reagan, which essentially was the counter-revolution, who wanted to restore America back to what it was before there were unions, before there was Medicare, before there was Social Security and all of that, and gave all power to the wealthy and the corporations. And that's what's been happening, and that's been going on apace. And, to talk about a mean-spirited guy. What does Trump say? You're fired or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Screw that guy. Wow. All right. Thank you. Let's see.
I mean, he never had me, but when he started with this birther stuff, I thought, really? Come on.
Here's Chuck in Canton. Chuck, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. I think as we as voters need to look at what the message is right now, and the message is that you know, we've been spending a lot of money the past few years, this administration has. And, I think Trump has the message we're all looking for. And if he can stick to that, I don't think the birther thing that he's talking about is really having an impact. I think if anything, it's helping, the party and it's helping him.
So what is it that he's saying that you like? Because and you say that we all, nah, not me, but what is it?
I mean, the great spender was George Bush. I mean, that he bid up, you know, the hundreds of billions of dollars unnecessarily for the military. He funded, or he began two wars that were unfunded because of this trillions of dollars tax cut to his wealthy buddies. Bush then bailed out the banks and left Obama holding the bag, essentially. What were the big spending programs? Oh, yeah, an unfunded drug bill, too, that Bush and the Republicans put in. What are the big expenditures of Obama?
I think the message that Trump is saying right now is that we need to look at these other countries that are ripping us off, and that's his main message. And nobody's addressed that issue. I don't think it's really the spending, because we're always going to have spending. It's what we're, it's the country is being ripped off right now by these other countries.
How are the, how's the country, wait a minute, how's the, how are we being ripped off by other countries, and what countries are ripping us off?
Well, like you're saying about China manipulating their currency and stuff. I mean, we're, you know, China, you know, sends us a lot of their goods that we pay a lot of money for. And they're manipulating their currency.
Well, all countries manipulate their currency. That's not the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that we allowed this country to be deindustrialized to the point where we don't make anything other than munitions any longer of any, you know, degree. And this was the industrial and financial class that allowed all of this. They're not ripping us off. They're doing what good business people do. They're trying to maximize their profits. We didn't want them to be commies anymore, so they're being good capitalists. In fact, they just did a poll that there are more people that have confidence in the free market in China than here in the United States.
Jeez.
So, I mean, blaming it on our predicament on other countries, again, it was the greed of these corporations that said they don't want to pay people. That was one, you know, I was talking about the golden age between 1950 and 1980. And that these companies said, well, wait a minute, why should we pay Americans? These are American companies. These are American men who made this decision that they don't want to pay Americans a good wage in order to maintain this country, its communities, its neighborhood, its families, and all of that. We'd rather go and wreck the lives of people in Asia because the conditions they work under are horrible. And then for a while, wreck the lives of the people in Mexico, although those conditions have gotten better. Still, they're paid what we would consider slave wages.
And so, wreck the lives of people here who had those jobs.
Yeah. So the corporations and the financial institutions that provide the cash for them decided we are sort of collateral damage, expendable people. There's an old folk song called "All Used Up." We're all used up because you know why? Because we said we're not peasants. We demand to share in the wealth that we're creating, and that's what happened from. I would put it back a little earlier, from the 1930s to 1980s. And Reagan and Reaganomics said, no, you don't. You're going to be subject to what we say because you're a pack of peasants. You don't have any rights other than what we grant you. And sometimes we'll be kind of nice to you. Sometimes we need you as cannon fodder for our wars. Sometimes we need you for dog meat from the factories that are left over that we can't ship out of here. And once I start hearing that from anyone, well, then maybe I'll give them, you know, a little bit of a nod.
Well, it's otherwise they just sit over there and just be quiet, right?
Yeah.
Let us go about our business.
Let's see. Here is Matt in Ann Arbor talking about Trump. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Long time listener.
Great.
Hey, thing about Trump there that everybody needs to realize is we need to keep Hollywood and politics totally separate.
Well, it's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, we started off badly with Reagan, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think, in the past, you got Reagan, you got Jesse Ventura, you got Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, come on. It doesn't take a genius.
I kind of like Al Franken, though.
Al Franken's done okay.
You like him.
Yeah, also, you know, like the other guy was saying there from Canton, he was saying, you know, that Donald Trump had all these great ideas, and as long as he stuck with them, it wouldn't be so bad. But what people don't realize is Donald Trump didn't get where he was by not being a salesman. That's He's going to tell you what you want to hear. And,
you bet.
You know, so everybody's just got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, but no one's telling me any of these ideas. No one can give me any concrete ideas. I'm asking for some concrete what he's saying that's turning everyone on. No one can give me anything, Peter.
All right, Matt, thank you very much. Well, I think I haven't heard him at all.
And he spoke at a bagger rally, okay?
Did he?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did, right? And he pulled out the birther card.
Uh-huh. Come on.
But one of the things he's probably saying, you know, we got to take our country back, and the banksters have ripped us off, and all. Everybody says that. The banksters, by the way, as I said, there's been a 650-page report called Wall Street and the Financial Crisis, Anatomy of a Financial Collapse. It was part of the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. A Democrat, Michigan's Carl Levin, a senator, and Tom Coburn, a Republican, issued it, or the chair of it. And a result of 2 years' work, the report focuses on an array of institutions with central roles in the mortgage crisis. Washington Mutual, an aggressive mortgage lender that collapsed in 2008. The Office of Thrift Supervision. This is a joke. Talk about.
Really.
This was under Bush, right? A regulator, the credit ratings agency Standard & Poor's and Moody's Investment Service, and the investment banks Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank. The report, this is according to what Senator Levin said, the report pulls back the curtain, this is important, on shoddy, risky, deceptive practices on the part, let's reverse the tape here. What's the important word here? The report pulls back on the curtain on shoddy, risky, deceptive practices. Deception in financial undertakings is a crime. But he didn't say that. I'm saying it. On the part of a lot of major financial institutions, blah, 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 blah. All right. I talk about the Google, as
okay.
Bush called it.
Right.
This is from Deseret News. Deseret is...
what is that?
What do you call it? Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Yeah, Salt Lake City paper. The Daily. Justice Department boasts 905 convictions in essence with savings and loan scandal. This is from Tuesday, July 21st, 1992. The election for president hasn't even occurred. Bush 1 is in office. And so this happened.
Under, and there's a Bushy involved in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One of the kids, Neil, yeah. He didn't get prosecuted, though.
Of course not.
The Justice Department said Monday it had charged more than 1,100 people so far in nearly 4 years of prosecuting the multi-billion-dollar savings and loan scandal, winning 905 convictions, but less than $500 million in restitution. So this, without going into what the whole, you just put in SNL or SNL scandal if you want to read about this. Even under a Republican like Daddy Bush, these banksters were prosecuted. Why in the world isn't there a prosecution going on now? I mean, the kid was never going to do it. And that's another criticism of Barack Obama. And when the conservatives are always saying, hey, he doesn't have very good high approval ratings, they came to me and simply asked the question, do you approve of Barack Obama? I'd say no. And so they'd say, oh, man, see, everybody's turning to Republicans. Well,
not so much.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's something I'd like to talk to, or someone. I'd like to talk to all of you. Sorry. Except for Todd. We can't talk to Todd anymore. It's Roman from Allen Park. Roman, thanks for calling 313-298-9743. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter, Jolene.
Hi.
I attended that rally on April 4th with Transport Workers Union of America. You know, out of 150 people, we could only get like 7 guys to go, you know.
From your local.
Yeah. But, you know, you think the rain might have had something to do with it, you know, like people lose their comfort level.
Let me ask you this, Roman. Did you see any of the TV footage of the Madison, Wisconsin demonstrations?
Yes.
Remember the blizzards that 100,000 people were standing out in? I mean, if people are going to, you know, I was lucky. I was marching. No, I don't know if anybody from my union, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, Africa, came down. But I was with the CWA, the Communication Workers of America, and we were in the AT&T building, which had a big overhang. Oh. So until it stopped raining, we were dry. No, it's miserable out there.
Yeah. I've been to the freezing cold in Washington, D.C., to protest Bush's inauguration, and I'd do it again. But, yeah, sometimes people are a little wimpy about it, for sure.
But
it was about 3,000 people. That's what Detroit News
said. Did it say 3,000? Hmm. Yeah, so I don't understand. I mean, the whole strategy, like I complained that it had this strong religious component when I didn't. Because, you know, when you start having a prayer vigil, they have, like, prayer vigils before, like, executions and all that. When we marched, a bunch of unions and this...
Or for missing people or...
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
I mean, there was this incredible energy, even though, you know, once you get over a few hundred people, there's a lot of energy to be had. And we're marching down Michigan Avenue and this is what democracy looks like, or what does democracy, and this is what democracy... Anyway, so, and then all of a sudden they say, and you know, they start these prayers and tell me what you think, Roman. I thought the spirit of it just dropped off a cliff.
Yeah, they had some kind of other agenda when we got to Hart Plaza, but, it was kind of nice, you know, marching down Lafayette and to Woodward. And
that was good.
Sure, yeah.
Well, let me tell you this. I suspect that probably some civil rights movement, or, you know, in the 1950s or some union movement in the early 30s, that the original organizers thought, said, man, how come nobody's joining us? Why this? But, you know, there's, if you think about on one hand, what happened in Wisconsin, and so we kind of expect that. And I don't know why people aren't responding quite as strongly or as strongly here, but I really think it's going to be people like you who are the first who are going to, be the people that can show some leadership.
And much credit to you and to the people who are actually there.
And we don't need leader. I mean, there's a difference here. There was a guy from the CWA, from the Communications Workers of America, that was giving speeches and leading chants, and I'm thinking, man, talk about natural leadership.
Yeah.
But leaders are the people that want to be in charge, like Donald Trump.
Is
a leader. Yeah, they're not in it for the power. They're in it because they know that, I mean, without even thinking about it, they have these special qualities that can get people moving. So,
speaking of that, Winston Smith wrote in and said, Donald, thanks for calling, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
Roman,
for showing up. Donald Trump's father left him, and this looks like what? 400 million.
400 million?
It says. Trump is a terrible businessman, Winston says, constantly being sued. He's an expert at taking advantage of the bankruptcy laws. There's a few more that I'll get to about Donald Trump, a few more emails. And if you have any, call talkyes@yahoo.com.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about the extraordinary attention the media gives to the teabaggers. And all they got to do, man, they fart in public and they're all over the news.
Did you smell that?
But there's all this deal about that the teabaggers are going to have these anti-tax rallies across the United States. Well, you know what? There's been anti-tax rallies across the United States for years and years. And this one is from Melanie, actually, in Huntington Woods, part of the Huntington Woods Peace Group. And she says Tax Day is April 18th this year. It's today, Monday. The Huntington Woods Peace, Citizenship, and Education Project will hold its annual Tax Day demonstration at the Royal Oak Post Office on 2nd Street, just west of Maine. We will gather there beginning at 3:30. The post office is only open until 7 p.m. There'll be no collections after that. No, you know, get with your tax or your, I guess you can dump it in the booth. Our demonstration will conclude at 7 p.m. Please join us. Remind folks with your signs that we are the ones who pay. Therefore, we should have a say. Military spending robs the coffers for education, cities, and social problems. And my old chiropractor, Jim, writing from, what'd you do with that? I'm looking for.
Oh.
Did you? Oh, no.
No, huh?
Here it is. This is Jim listening in, outside of Atlanta. He says, way back in the 80s, when I started attending tax avoidance meetings, they were mostly populated with a bunch of crusty old Republicans and libertarians. I was a token hippie on board. Most of my friends were on some sort of welfare program or living on student loans. How times have changed? This is an issue we can all get on board. Big banks, big pharma, big insurance, and military contractors have taken us all to the cleaners, and the government is the bag man. We may soon all be speaking some... I don't... Never mind. Don't want to say that. Didn't like that, Jim. Never mind.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But anyway, if you're in Atlanta listening, there is going to be a demonstration there as well. But the idea is we're... As middle-class people... We're not overtaxed at all. What's the problem is that it's going, as Jim says, to feed the military, which is absolutely unnecessary. Why do we have why are we spending trillions on a military? We don't have any enemies. We say, well, what about China? They spend what, like 7% of their budget on military? We spend 50% of it. And what we could do if there was proper collection of tax money from those that can best afford it, the ultra wealthy, and let's go down a little. The wealthy and the corporations, if they were even taxed according to the tax code, these ones that like GE, who pays no taxes, ExxonMobil, who barely pays any. You know, Warren Buffett says my secretary pays a higher tax schedule than he, this second or third richest man in America.
Right.
If we collected
what's wrong with this picture?
Proper taxes and allocated it correctly, none of the problems we're having would be here. We could have free college tuition. We could have every city could be a model city. Everybody could be employed. But as long as we're letting the banksters and the ruling class rob us, we're going to keep just fighting. You know, are we going to fire our teachers? Are we going to lay off cops? Are we going to close our libraries? Unless you're willing to tax the rich, you know, we always say eat the rich, but we know you're not as radical as ours, so as we are. So at least, you know, why don't we just stick with tax the rich? They can afford to do, they can afford to finance this society. We can no longer.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Friends Hair and Nail in Grosse Pointe Woods, AbbeyBody.com, Fusion Salon in Royal Oak, Dynamite Auto in Mount Clemens, and Brzezik's Cafe in Clinton Township.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123.
How much are you paying to invest in stocks? Keep your costs low with a ShareBuilder account from ING Direct. Unlike many other online brokerages, ShareBuilder has no account or investment minimums, so you can get started with any amount. And if you text right now, you can get a $50 account bonus after your first investment. Just text the word money to 42330. With ShareBuilder, you can open your account and keep it open with any amount. Text right now to get a $50 account bonus. Just text the word money to 42330 and get more information about this great offer from ShareBuilder. Some restrictions apply. Text the word money to 42330. That's 42330. Message and data rates may apply. Securities products are not FDIC insured, not bank guaranteed, and may lose value, and are offered by ShareBuilder Securities Corporation, a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC. ShareBuilder Securities Corporation is a subsidiary of ING Bank, FSB.
Our son would go from, "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other, and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadigan, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Yes. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Ready for our final segment, Jolene?
Yes, I'm ready.
Let's see. At 1 a.m., My website's static. You can still go to it, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. But if you go to it, there's a big sign there. Is it even still there? I don't know. I think I might have got rid of it. Anyway, that says, oh, yeah, here it is. That says, new website coming. No new additions will be made to this site until April 25th. But go to our night call page. You can just go to facebook.com/nightcall. Did I say that right? Facebook.com/nightcall.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff there. And to be sure, friends always wanted as well. At, you know, and since I don't have my site that I always read from, I can't remember the man's first name. A New York Times environmental reporter. We're coming up on Earth Day. And so he's a guy going to be talking about population. And also, this is a repeat show. This says at the end, or throughout it, I think I cut off the end saying, that Mark Rudd, who was this 1960s radical, was part of the students that took over Columbia University, 1968, 1969, mm-hmm. somewhere like that. It's an interesting, pretty interesting interview. Pretty rad. Check that out at 1 a.m. All right, let's go back to our phones. And here is Rick in East Point. Rick, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Pete. I'd like to talk to you tonight. I'd like to stay on topic and talk about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. This is coming from my perspective as a big C constitutionalist, a small L libertarian, and a little tiny, tiny R Republican. Okay, Trump as the figurehead of conservative, you know, of the conservative movement, it makes me want to puke. He is, he's just a capitalist, and he is the type of capitalist that gives capitalism a bad name. He's not a free market guy. He's a crony capitalist.
Wait. First, what capitalist, when you think of, it gives it a good name, like Henry Ford or any of these guys from the 19th century, or, I don't know, the head of GE, the head of ExxonMobil? It's a bad class of people, and I got to tell you, Rick, there is no such thing as a free market, and there never has been.
Okay, Pete, the kind of guy that's the capitalist that I like is the guy that runs the fish store that I buy my stuff from, the guy that runs the bike, the motorcycle shop that I buy my stuff from, those kind of capitalists. Okay?
But you know why? The only reason they even exist is because the monopolists have not found a way to suck their business out, although like stores like Walmart and others are on the way to ruin all those local businesses. And those, in real terms of what capitalism's all about, are barely a footnote of a footnote. Yeah, those are the people I like to go to. Those are the people I like to support. I like to stay away from the big box stores. I understand why people go to them, because the prices are cheaper and all of that. But the idea of sort of this Main Street market where, you know, hi, Mr. Werbe, how are you today? You still want that box of Cheerios, you know? I mean, it just ain't there. And that's never what dominated capitalism from its origins. There never was like a golden age of capitalism. It was always mean, rapacious, exploitative, repressive, generally awful to people.
Pete, I don't like Trump, okay?
You know, okay.
I don't like him.
Okay. Okay.
I don't
like him either.
I don't either.
I'm gone.
Okay. All right. He's gone.
You're gone.
Yeah. I guess so. He said he was gone. Yeah. I thought he was going to argue because he said he was a constitutionalist. Well, I just happen to have the Constitution up here. And as you remember, that its preamble says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish. You know, you've heard this so much. That it's almost like can't, you know, C-A-N-T without an apostrophe. It's a caricature. But these words and these phrases that were chosen by Jefferson and other people were loaded with meaning because they were doing something extraordinary. They broke away from this enormous empire and the divine rule of kings. They weren't subjects, they were citizens that had rights designated and protections designated. So they wanted to form a, you know, more perfect union, establish justice, and, you know, there wasn't justice in an arbitrary system of rule in the manner that, that England was ruled, ensure domestic tranquility, which didn't happen, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare. Hello?
Ooh.
Promote the general welfare. That's what the function of the Constitution says right in it. It doesn't say we're going to provide people with enormous profit. It doesn't say that we're going to restrict any regulation of people destroying the environment. It says we're going to promote the general welfare. And people always say that it's to promote individual liberty. Well, those are actually, that was an afterthought. Remember, it's called the First Amendment. It wasn't even in the original Constitution. I mean, it's good that it's in there. Don't get me wrong. But what they were concerned about was, and these were, you know, these were the elite of colonial society. I mean, one of the things that they were PO'd about was the crown restricted them in lots of ways economically. And I mean, it was pretty complex. I mean, all the southern states wanted to do it because they were afraid that slavery was going to be abolished in the colonies because England was getting ready to abolish slavery. Mm. And there were some legal precedents happening. So that's why, you know, the slave states were all on board, and that's why slavery is also embedded in the United States Constitution. Well, all right, ding, 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 ding. History class is over. Let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Eric in Melvindale. Eric, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How are you doing?
We're good.
Good. You were talking a few moments ago about taxes and the purpose of them.
Yeah.
I get the idea that, you know, basically taxes are, I mean, for this country, for the people that live here, is that we support the systems that are in place to help benefit ourselves.
Should be, yeah.
I agree with you there, should be. It's just that sometimes it seems like there's people out there that choose to manipulate that for their own self-interest.
Well, yeah. But really, let me just repeat again, Eric, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but if the corporations and the wealthy paid, even in terms of these reduced rates, because their tax burden has been going precipitously down ever since Reagan got in office, that even if they only, we didn't raise taxes on the wealthy and the corporations at all, if they just paid their fair share of that, we would have no budget crisis whatsoever, and the emergency financial manager of Detroit would not be talking about firing all 5,400 teachers in the city. But go ahead, sorry.
Yeah. Well, my thing about the issue of taxes is that I believe that because we live in a state that there's, you know, we pay our fair share for the purpose of educating the people that live here so that they can have the opportunities that they want to have in their lives. And it's just unfortunate that there are people that are in place that are choosing to take that money and use it for other purposes as opposed to benefiting the people that live in this community where they decide basically, you know, we're going to take your money and it's going to be paid for this and this. And yet, you know, when it comes to issues like funding the arts and that, and providing enough opportunity for kids to see, you know, get a well-rounded education, we're not going to give them enough money to do so. But yet these people that are in power that take that and decide what the money is going to be spent on for education
mm-hmm.
are the ones that reap the benefits. I mean, they sit in these buildings. They have these buildings that are designed by architects that, you know, had benefited from the purposes or the fruits of public education. When you look at the things that they, you know, these buildings, the way that they're designed, the artwork that goes into these buildings that they sit in, it would be interesting for one day possibly to walk into these buildings. I mean, you know, you look at the artwork that's in there, the paintings that are in there.
Well, that's all important, but and I'm just kind of running out of time here. I can see by the clock in the wall. In England, the conservative government there said, we're going to raise tuition for colleges. 20,000 students show up in downtown London, and including attacking, which I don't think is a good idea,
no.
Attacking the Conservative Party headquarters and trashing it. That bad business. They didn't have to do that. But as long as we take it, and here's the problem, people like if I said to you, Eric, and you could ask me the same question back, I say, well, what are you going to do tomorrow to deal with this problem we're facing? And you could say, well, what are you going to do, Pete? What is present in all these other countries where we see these enormous demonstrations? I mean, in Iceland, the people brought down the government because of the shenanigans there. They have the leadership of the unions, and they have people that are used to standing up for themselves. They're not depending on the political parties, and sometimes the political parties come tailing along if you, you know, get enough energy there. But until we build a mass movement, first of resistance, but then puts forth our own vision and doesn't depend on, you know, the current reality, we're going to, you know, we're going to keep getting stuck, I guess. All right. Thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate it.
All right.
Let's see here. Ted in Sterling Heights. Hi, Ted. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
We're good.
Good. The question I have is, I mean, not a comment, but it's like I'm hearing that the governor is like he passed the law or he's going to pass the law basically where I live in Sterling Heights and somewhat it's going okay with our city officials that we voted in. But someone from legislation through Lansing can come in and just start firing all these elected officials we voted in, and one person just makes decisions?
Well, the way the legislation reads that was passed by this Republican legislature and signed by the Governor Snyder is that if he, the governor, recognizes an impending financial crisis in a city like Sterling Heights or wherever, Detroit, for instance, he can appoint, without asking anybody else, an emergency financial manager.
Of his choice. Just, here you go. Now he's in charge. Yeah, he is.
He is now in charge of Sterling Heights. He can fire everybody, all the teachers, all the janitors, all the police, all the fire. I don't know that anybody would, you know, necessarily that would be so drastic. But really what they want to do is they want to get rid of public employees that are in unions because they make, whoa, how horrible. They make a middle-class wage.
Oh, how dare they?
And why should they pay janitors, you know, $18 an hour with benefits when they can contract it out for probably, you know, $12 an hour?
Or less.
Of which the janitors will that are working for the contractor will get about seven or eight. Yeah, I think they got to pay them. What is it now? Seven something.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we're laughing at something else.
Not that.
Yeah.
At all.
So, yeah, it's terrible. But listen off the air, Ted. I'll talk more about what's happening in Detroit. This is from the Free Press. In an announcement that marks a new day in the fiscal crisis in Detroit public schools, Robert Bob, the district's emergency manager, said today the district is sending layoff notices to all 5,400 teachers and plans to use new legal powers to modify their contracts. In other words, here are people. Can you imagine teaching in Detroit, how trying that is?
Yeah, or you've been doing it your whole life,
and
30
years. And I know teachers. My next-door neighbor is a Detroit public school teacher, by the way. Other friends of mine who the district is so underfinanced that it sometimes she would buy toilet paper and bring it
to
school.
They still do that.
Yeah.
And supplies.
I mean, so absolutely committed. Teaching in poor neighborhoods is always so challenging to begin with. And they are telling these people, hey, screw you. You're out of here. You're making $65,000 a year. I don't know if
and
that's
how much
even
does that Robert Bob make?
$450,000.
Yeah.
This is the emergency manager. And so what they're going to do is the first time the district has been sent layoff notices to every member of the Detroit Federation of Teachers, and the first time their contract has been in danger of termination. And this is the DFT is already poised to fight. I'm reading this out. Great. Said, we are already prepared with our legal counter. Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, they're probably, I was going to say general strike. They're going to say, yeah, good, get out of here. You know, but we got to be careful about that. But let's get John from Port Huron in on the discussion. John, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time calling.
Welcome.
Hey, I want to say my hometown is Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
And I've seen what has happened with what has gone on with Flint as far as, like, you know, when big corporations pull out.
Sure.
Everybody loses their jobs. And I've seen, you know, my whole family, and they were all engineers. Lost their jobs.
Really?
You know, and I'm just thinking that maybe somebody needs to take a step back and look at Flint, Michigan and say, hey, if we don't start doing something here, this is what our whole country is going to end up like.
Yeah, well, they need to just get Roger and Me.
That documentary.
You know, exactly. But, you know, that's kind of a far shot when you're living it day to day, when you have to move out of the city that you lived in your whole life.
Well, when I said, I've said this a couple times now, the first shops began moving to the American South because they were non-union. Because people in General Motors and Ford and Chrysler, said, wait a minute, why are we paying these union wages? Well, guys, it was almost all guys then, guys could strike if things went bad, that they had a hand in things. When we could go down south and pay people a third, this is the American South, a third of what we're paying up here, don't have to pay any benefits, and the same sheriffs that are beating the crap out of the African Americans that want civil rights also beat the crap out of any union organizer.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, so I've said this, is that Walter Reuther should have said, one shop goes south, we call a general strike in auto. And the UAW had the power then to do that. They could have done that right then. And the other thing that should have happened, there should have been legislation that heavily taxed any company leaving the country, bringing jobs overseas. I mean, like a tax so punitive that no country would have even gone. I'm sorry, no country. No company would have even gone. And but, you know, it's the toothpaste is out of the tube.
Yeah,
so now we
right.
can... You know, it's like I say, we can either fight back or thatch our roofs. Okay, thank you. Appreciate you being our last caller. Brian, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave you hanging because we got to get out of here. Yeah.
If we're here.
Sure. We don't know whether it's Easter. Yeah.
We know it's Easter.
Yeah, but they don't like atheists on during Easter.
No, I don't
Easter.
Think it's a good idea.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But Athena and Sarah, thank you.
Thanks.
Jalene, thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. And stay tuned for the interviews.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
It's amazing how great your home looks with new Carpenter flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? Protect your home with a security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer. Call now and get $850 of hardware and activation for free. Call 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge. 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions and Protect Your Home license number.
Jeez, Q. It's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet?
No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
Mm-mm, no.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Ow.
Dude, what is
Ow.
This? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, There's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Does your furnace need repair? Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Is your roof leaking? Or are you ready to replace your windows? Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Big or small, no matter what your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro at fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online source of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. You can have instant access to roofers, plumbers, maids, handymen, chimney sweeps, remodelers, and many other professionals. Visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com and find the right home pro for your project. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Waves 40th Anniversary Concert, Stone Temple Pilots Live. This Wednesday at the Fillmore Detroit, celebrate 40 years of WRIF with Stone Temple Pilots, plus special guest Taddy Porter and the reunion of Toby Red featuring Chad Smith on 420. Go figure. The show is completely sold out, so keep it on 101 The Riff to score your free tickets and more. WRIF's 40th Anniversary Concert, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Presented by Live Nation and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. April 22nd, another important event in our calendar. It's Earth Day. And the last April 22nd was the 40th anniversary of that day when we try to pay attention to what's happening on our planet and, stop ruining it, right? Little individual acts, community acts, hopefully legislation at the national level that would stop the ongoing massive pollution and destruction that still continues, even with an environmental consciousness that almost every single one of us says that we share. Well, to discuss the coming of this Earth Day on April 22nd, the 41st anniversary, is my guest, Andy Revkin. He's one of the world's leading environmental journalists. For 15 years, he covered the environmental beat for the New York Times. His .earth blog, and that's D-O-T, Earth, you can go to that, easy enough, .earth blog, remains a popular mainstay at nytimes.com. He has 25 years' experience in environmental reporting, and he travels around the world checking all of this out. He's the author of several books on environmental issues, and he is also the senior fellow for environmental understanding at Pace University. It's a pleasure to welcome Andy Revkin to the Peter Werby Show. Hi, Andy. Welcome.
Good to be with you.
This is a strange way to start it, but I see you're the senior fellow for environmental understanding, and I said everybody says that they have an environmental consciousness. Do you think there is a widespread environmental understanding? Well, there's two things. One is environmental consciousness that we think we have. On right. The other hand, there is actual environmental understanding. Is there a difference?
I think there is. Just looking at climate and weather, for example, there's a lot of surveys that show. In fact, there was some recent study that showed that that your attitudes on global warming shift depending on the weather out your window.
Right. If it's cold, you don't believe it.
Yeah, literally, they find that people have different answers on surveys about what they would want to do or how concerned they are. And, you know, they don't, the surveyors don't tell the people that they're thinking about what the people are preserving looking out the window, but it shows statistically that that's true. So what I've been trying to do as a journalist for close on 30 years writing about these issues is convey facts. And I really focused a lot on the kind of geophysical stuff, you know, if these gases go up, then this will happen, or if this happens in the Amazon, then that will, you know, these species will go away. And I, more recently, I started doing a lot more reporting about the behavioral aspects of, you know, how we perceive the environment, how we perceive risks generally. And I realized I was, if I just spent the rest of my life pumping out more facts, I was not really very likely to change people's attitudes very much. So the environmental understanding label at PACE is really my effort to try to figure out how to weigh in, how to make information matter in relation to these pretty complicated issues that we face in this century.
Well, Andy Revkin, I know that one of the things you've been focusing on lately is population, and this coming Earth Day, April 22nd, also takes place in the same year that global population is expected to exceed 7 billion. And that's what I meant sort of when I was talking about the difference between environmental consciousness and actual environmental understanding. Problems of population are now not new. Paul Ehrlich, who I interviewed recently, wrote the population bomb in 1968. In the 1970s, Paul McCartney was singing Too Many People. Is there too many people? I mean, a lot of people said, hey, we can easily do 9 billion on this planet if there was a proper distribution of resources and wealth.
Yeah, I've written tons about this, as you've mentioned. It really is it's a much fuzzier question than it felt like in the 60s. Back then, Paul's book really laid out a specific and very frightening scenario for pretty much a huge amount of turmoil and pain and early mortality and chaos from this, and that didn't come to pass. Now, you look around the world today, and what you see really is that there are too many people, but they have to define where. In other words, there are parts of sub-Saharan Africa where there are definitely too many people for the carrying capacity of that region. The rain-fed areas where people are scrabbling around trying to grow a little bit of crops very inefficiently. There's high mortality, high numbers of births and deaths, terrible existence. Essentially, all the things that he forecast would be much more widespread are happening in the world today. So that's why a few years ago in Dot Earth I wrote a piece called The Population Cluster Bomb, because in reality, the impacts of having too many people with not enough resources are always local.
Oh, you know, I just got that. I saw the population bomb. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's good. I was slow, but that's a good use of that. Go ahead.
A lot of bomblets.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, the other aspect of the world right now is there really are two population stories right now unfolding at the same time. One is that a substantial chunk of the world the populations have stopped growing. In fact, many countries are seeing aging and shrinking populations. Japan's population could easily decline by half by the end of the century from where it is now because of just basic demographics. There's more and more older people, fewer young people, and no immigration to speak of. The United States is heading from 300 million toward 400 million or even close to half a billion by mid-century, mostly through immigration. So there, too, you know, there's no simple story of population anymore. You have to look in different places, and you see different sets of issues.
Well, Andy Revkin, why I raise the idea of a population and how it's connected to ideas of wealth distribution and resources is because one of the objections as early as the late 1960s when Paul Ehrlich published his population bomb was that that poverty and what appears to be overpopulated areas is more like a lack of wealth and resources. So, I mean, as it is, and you may or very well may be aware of Mike Davis's collection of, actually it's a book, Planet of Slums, where half the population of the world now lives, more than half, lives in cities, lives in these teeming what we used to call third world countries, whereas if you go not too far from where you live or from where I live, where I'm broadcasting now, everything looks swell, you know, nice cars, yeah. Everyone's eating, everyone's worried about their waistline because they're eating too much and driving nice, beautiful cars. So what, that objection that it was, that was made to Paul Ehrlich's book was that we don't have a population bomb. What we have is a maldistribution of wealth, essentially.
And again, that gets back to this idea that both the condition of a population and its impacts on the environment are all a function of a couple of things. Wealth is a proxy for having the stuff you need. And again, the impacts change a lot, too. New York City is incredibly populous, but has a very low environmental footprint overall because people there live very efficiently, don't use a lot of energy, don't drive a lot. And Los Angeles is a very different kind of city where there's a high energy use per person. And then you go to, I wrote a few years ago about Luanda, Angola. I was at the UN at a meeting on climate, and there I met the environment minister for Angola, one of those countries in sub-Saharan Africa that's had fast growth in lots of things. And he was saying, you know, don't talk to me about climate change. I live in a country where our main city, Luanda, went from 500,000 people to 5 million people in 20 years, from the 70s through till the end of the century. And that's generated huge problems in that city. Now, the lesson of this part of the population story, the urbanization part, is that if you get cities to function reasonably well, you can actually go a long way toward fostering progress and not having a lot of breakdown and a lot of environmental impacts from human life, because cities can be our salvation. The first piece I wrote about that was back in 2002 in this big series we did in the Times called Managing Planet Earth. And since then, it's become even clearer that if you make cities, give them the capacity to handle that influx of people, then more people get access to education quicker. There's generally better prospects for employment. Women do better in cities. Family sizes, you don't have to enforce population control because people who move to cities prefer to have fewer kids and have the capacity to have fewer kids. And all in all, that can be that intensification, you know, getting more people in a smaller space, but living functionally can be a really good thing for the planet, too.
Andy Revkin is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. He writes the Dot Earth blog. You can go to DOT and spell it out, Earth. And it's part of the New York Times blog system, if you will. You can go to nytimes.com. Can you find it through that as well?
Yeah, just nytimes.com, and it's on the opinion side of the paper now. I was on the news side for the longest time, but the blog is... It's actually just nytimes.com/opinion, mm-hmm. And it's there, too.
Now, I used to be sympathetic to the criticism that what really, when people made criticisms or said that the population was a bomb, is that essentially it meant that there were too many people of color in the world and it was going to start taking resources from us white people who were enjoying a nice standard of living. But it occurred to me, I don't know, somewhere along the line, we're going to hit 7 billion people soon, that if 7 billion people consume anywhere near like I do, or I assume you do, I don't think the planet can't handle that, can it?
Well, there you get into this question of technology. And if you have 7 billion people all farming like the most inefficient farmers in sub-Saharan Africa, forget about it. There'll be mass starvation. You just can't do it. If you have 7 billion people being fed by farmers like those growing corn in Iowa, who are superstars, or even half as efficient as them, half as productive, you could easily feed the world. There are fundamental limits in when you get to the point of can everybody, you know, have steak and lobster every 2 days, then it really does stretch.
Or drive a car.
Yeah. I'll focus on food for a second and then
okay.
Maybe get back to energy.
Go ahead.
On the food side, which has been in the headlines lately, I've had long discussions on the blog. I did a piece that people can easily Google for called Beyond the Eternal Food Fight, which gets at the question of are we poised for calamity or are we going to kind of have another green revolution? And the discussion there was really interesting because both those who are technological optimists, you know, who really feel that if you focus on intensifying agriculture and doing more productivity, we'll all be fine. Even they say that it's really not tenable to have a world eating sort of a purely Western upper middle class kind of diet. It just won't really be able to happen. And that for health reasons as well, there'll ideally be a migration away from the idea that the steak that sort of goes over both edges of the plate, that kind of thing, is a sign of progress. That's a sensible and thing to do if you're a successful person.
Well, let me just say that your publicist sent some questions, and she has a quote from you. It said, 9 billion vegan monks, that is people that eat no animal products, a vegan diet, would not overload Earth systems. I don't know.
Well, as I think what I said, too, is that
we're not going to
all be vegan monks.
Very few. Very few. In other words, people are going to be out in the world, moving around, need transportation systems. But I wonder, given, you know, what's, I mean, maybe we could figure out at a crisis point how to manage agricultural systems better. But we're running out of topsoil. I mean, I know you know that. I mean, it keeps getting blown away. We're more and more dependent on fossil fuel fertilizers. I don't know if we could feed 9 billion vegan monks.
Yeah. Well, there too. Overall, the trends are that the productivity of farming globally has still been rising 1 or 2% a year unerringly. And much of that, again, is because so much of the world is still incredibly inefficient in the way that it farms. You look at these, if people could Google for the phrase yield gap,
okay,
it shows you how many, the huge difference in tons per hectare of whatever, grain, peas, soybeans, between the poorer countries and the richer countries. And it's like many times greater. So if you, as I said before, if you even come in halfway better in the poorest places, then you can go a long way toward feeding the world. That doesn't mean that it'll always happen in a smooth, easy way. There, so many chunks of the world are hungry because of dysfunctional governments, for example, that they're never going to, well, I wouldn't say never, but until they have functional governments in some sub-Saharan countries, you know, Zimbabwe right now, the turmoil and poverty there is largely a function, again, of not of lack of resources. It was a pretty remarkable country a while back, but of failure of governance. So those issues matter as well. But the history of innovation. Now, one thing that's lacking and that many analyses have pointed to, both for energy and for food, is the world and the United States ourselves too have really disinvested in basic research. We're not really pumping even a small percentage of our wealth into making sure we have the innovative capacity to create breakthroughs in those areas. And it's hard, of course, when budgets are tight as they are now, to think about the long term. But we're living off of the kind of intellectual riches that were derived 50 years ago from a real push on science. And right now we're sort of, again, there's very little evidence that this country and also other advanced countries is willing to put in the money into basic R&D and demonstration projects on both food front and the energy front. And both are really vital. And by the way, the energy...
Well, let's do this before... I just want to slip something in here that caught my eye in the... in the publicity sheet that was sent to me about you, and it said that that you had an encounter with Rush Limbaugh, which he compared you to jihadists and told you to kill yourself. What in the world could that be all about?
Well, it's because I've mentioned some things that are uncomfortable for some people. I was talking about one of the things I mentioned a few minutes ago, which was that the United States is seeing a high rate of population growth. It's really an anomaly. Most industrialized countries are either flat or declining populations. But the U.S., again, mainly through immigration, is rising numbers. And, you know, when you add a person in the U.S., whether they come here as an immigrant or are born here, you're adding a kind of a super emitter when it comes to greenhouse gases and that kind of thing, because we have such a larger energy appetite than people in poorer countries, which is just part of the reality of where we're at. And so I said, well, look, you know, if the world is going to get more serious about carbon and have all these carbon trading systems, this was in 2009, maybe if there are energy, if you get your carbon credits for, you know, growing trees somewhere or whatever, maybe an American family would get credits for having fewer kids. I threw it out as a, let's call it like a thought experiment. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't promoting the idea. I was saying, because frankly, I don't think carbon trading was ever going to work, and I've written that too. But it got picked up by a conservative blogger, and Rush got hold of it, and it was really amazing. If anyone just Google for Limbaugh and Revkin, and you'll find the audio, and it's basically, he says, Mr. Revkin of the New York Times, if you really think that people are the worst thing that ever happened to this planet, why don't you just go kill yourself and save the planet by dying?
Well, you know, I heard him years ago. He said, look out for these liberals. They're trying to take away your SUV. I mean, this was what was behind in environmentalism as far as he was concerned. But why is concern for our planet politicized? In other words, if you believe in climate change, if you think that we ought to have the phrase you used, a smaller environmental footprint and all that, somehow it's associated with liberals or the left. And the right wing, if you say, I don't think there's any climate change, I would think, if someone said that, I would immediately think they were a conservative. So how is the concern for our nest turned into a political football or issue, or however you'd like to define it?
Well, it is unfortunate that that happened. My sense is it evolved through the mid to late 2000s, where, and you know, this wasn't new. It also, this issue hit, I first wrote about global warming in the late 1980s, and then too, some of these same debates played out between conservatives and liberals. But what happened when Al Gore's movie came out was, for many people, his persona became attached to this thing called global warming in a way that made the global warming issue, whatever you thought of the science, almost untouchable if you were a conservative Republican. And I don't think Al Gore probably didn't intend that to happen, but it just has. And he was really not the ideal messenger. For example, if you really wanted to have action on this that was bipartisan, you wouldn't want a politician to be the kind of spokesperson, the poster person for your issue. And so it did get politicized in that sense early on, and that just intensified through the sort of electoral cycle the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do have, of course, fundamental splits in our country, and not just in our country, but in, you look at almost any population, and there's a range of people from, there's these sociologists who've broken it down pretty scientifically. There are communitarians and there are individualists, and these are really profound differences in how people look at issues. And those, in other words for those same things, are liberals and libertarians. And they're never going to look at the same set of data on something like climate and come out with the same conclusion about what to do. And so much of the political fight over global warming hasn't been about science, it's been about the policy questions. And, you know, liberals had a very different set of policies that they preferred for how to tackle the issue. So the policy stuff got all mixed up with the science and actually poisoned, in a way, the science picture, which is pretty basic.
Well, we just have a few minutes left with Andy Revkin. His blog is .earth, .earth, and I saw it somewhere, that it's easier than I thought. You can go to nytimes.com and look in the opinion section, or it's .dot, .earth, .blogs, .nytimes.com. If you're driving, that's probably a bit. I'll have a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R. VE.com. So we're coming up to Earth Day. There's going to be sort of celebrations and people, you know, talk about green energy and what have you. And that seems to exist on a community level in people's consciousness, but the seas are in trouble. The pollution continues unabated. There is an attempt of the Republicans to even peel back a lot of the regulations put through the Environmental Protection Agency. You are a senior fellow for environmental understanding at Pace University. It's grade time. You got the government, you got the people, you got the actual situation. You give out any grades here? How are we doing?
Well, we're not, as a species, we have a real hard time with the long-term picture, whether the issue is an environmental risk or financial risk. As you can see now in the debate over the budget and the deficit, you know, all the bad budget cuts that have been fought over are on the margins, and the issues that we really need to tackle, but they're kind of hard, like Social Security and Medicare, or stay off the out of the discussion. And with energy, it's kind of the same. I see the climate challenge as much more akin to the debt and the deficit than to some old environmental problem like smog in the 20th century. So I don't see us kind of getting mobilized to tackle it in that sense. And one reason I personally, the thing that gets me excited, the people I give an A-plus to are young people particularly, but not always young, just people who are engaged in the frontiers of innovation. And I don't just mean innovation meaning being an engineer and coming up with a new efficient widget. I mean social innovations as well, finding ways to use this explosion in mobile phone connectedness around the world to foster how fast people can learn. And when a poor person gets access to a cell phone in a struggling country now, can listen to an MIT lecture online free and help pull that person into being educated and part of the economy. And those things give me great hope.
Well, let me, I think so many of us do things because we have it available, like recycle and try not to, we don't throw batteries in the streams anymore and, right. and what have you. So we've learned that, but can our individual actions have the impact that we need, that really what we need are large society-wide policy decisions, eh?
Well,
is that clear what I mean? In other words,
yeah,
we're all good-hearted environmentalists, but as long as we still have coal-fired plants spewing out pollutants, our recycling doesn't amount to much.
Yeah, well, there too, I just think it is one thing I think is vital is to really look to be radical, but not in the word radical has become a label. But radical in the Latin root of the word means to get to the root of the problem. And the root of our climate challenge is all about energy. And when you look at energy and you look at the lack of our investment, and it's not a lot of money, like a 2-cent wiggle in the gas tax, 2 cents, would triple our investment in energy, our research and development. And that's invisible compared to the fluctuations we've been living with. So I think there's more of a chance for us to kind of get into gear if we really do kind of get away from issues that can be very divisive, like that politicized debate about global warming, and just get to the heart of what made America great in the first place, which is our innovative capacity and enterprise, and really recognize that there's a huge amount of positive possibility here, and not to label it simplistically with labels like green jobs, because that's, I think, too facile in the sense that there are also fossil jobs out there now still, meaning jobs that rely on old fuels. So it's not like we're going to, any green job means the economy is going to become a better thing. I do think, though, that this idea that if we look at this idea of legacy as well, that, and this is where it's not young people, I think a lot of the older people I meet really do have a powerful passion for a legacy and that sense of responsibility to leave the planet in a decent shape for next generations. So if you can harness that power from the older folks among us and the enterprising, innovative energy of young people, I think there's huge prospects. I see some good trajectories and some that are troubling, and I get pretty bummed out when I dig in too deep into human nature, how we just sort of behave. But on the blog, I, again, the Dot Earth is kind of a discussion zone for everyone, whatever your political.
Well, everybody has that opportunity to advance this discussion by going to Andy Revkin's blog. It's Dot Earth, D-O-T, Earth, or you can go to nytimes.com and go to the opinions section, and you'll find more of everything we've been talking about. Well, April 22nd, Earth Day 2011 coming up, and I think it's a good time to see what we can all do. I want to thank you very much for being on the Peter Werby Show, and there'll be a link on my website as well to your blog. Thanks again for being on my program.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled. All with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief. Managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the Original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
My dad is my hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. He helps them get out, even when he can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My dad is a firefighter, but the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground, almost a ghost from the 1960s and the 1970s, reappeared at the time of the elections last year, brought by Sarah Palin. Remember, Bill Ayers was the guy Palin said that Barack Obama was palling around with terrorists, and that was Bill Ayers. Well, you may remember, or you can still go to our podcast and see the interview I did with Bill Ayers, where he discussed his role during that period, subsequently, and his relationship to Barack Obama. There's been a number of memoirs, certainly, of that era, and they're instructive, and it's odd in a way how this that generation and that period continues to, depending on how you look at it, haunt us, inform us, you be the judge of that. Another memoir has come my way, and it promises to be just as exciting and just as challenging. The book is My Life with SDS and the Weather Underground. SDS was the largest student organization during the 1960s, involved in anti-war, civil rights, and all the other liberations of that era. The Weather Underground was an organization that was sort of a small end of the of SDS at its conclusion in the late 60s, who, following a mishap among several of the members who were preparing bombs, exploded and killed three of them. Mark Rudd was a student leader of SDS. He was one of the leaders of the legendary Columbia takeover in 1968 that opposed the university's connection to the war in Vietnam and also its institutional racism. He was one of the founders of the Weather Underground. And following the mishap at this bomb factory, essentially, he was underground. That is, he was a fugitive for 7.5 years from 1970 to 1977. He has written the book, as I said, My Life with SDS and the Weather Underground. It's a pleasure to welcome Mark Rudd. I believe where you're in Albuquerque, are you?
That's right, Peter. Thank you for having me on the show.
Pleased to do it. Any, I always wonder when I make these long introductions, any corrections you'd like to make, or did I?
Well, one thing I might add is that the actual name of the book is Underground. The My Life with SDS and the Weather Underground is a subtitle.
There you go. If
the
I would have
called Underground.
I'm looking at it, so if I would have, but you're right. It reads either way. But Underground, in fact, is the name of. You can go to Mark Rudd, RUDD.com, and there's a link to the book and lots of other things about Mark Rudd. Are memoirs to be trusted? I mean, that's first thing. On one hand, one is lucky to get a first-hand account, and certainly historians make mistakes all the time because they're dealing with secondary sources, but where's the tension in there between an?
Well, I don't know about most or all memoirs. I do know about this one. I worked really hard to make it accurate and honest. I checked as many facts as I could and talked to people involved. Of course, there's interpretations vary, and you know, eyewitnesses even are notoriously unreliable. But I did try to make this accurate and honest, and I think this particular one worked out.
Well, Mark, I can say you're kind of breaking up. Are you, if you're close to your base, not close to your base, please go back there, because it sounded good at first, and now it's beginning to break up a bit. But we did hear you. We'll see how this goes. Tell us why you were a fugitive for 7.5 years.
You might say that there were both defensive and offensive reasons. I mean, first of all, we had a theory, an idea that if we began armed struggle against the state, that many, many people would join us, and it was a revolutionary moment, a moment when everything would change, when people would be disgusted with the system of war and racism and injustice that we have. And I think we were very young, and we read certain signs but not others. It looked like revolution, and so we said, well, if it's going to be revolution, it's going to be war.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing was that, as you mentioned, we were wanted on various federal charges, and stemming from demonstrations and bombings and other things. So it was both offensive and defensive. The general idea, though, was it was a revolutionary moment, and we should seize the time.
Actually, the opposite was true, was it not? I mean, the new left was almost, I don't know, by 1970, certainly by 1972 in the re-election of the hated Richard Nixon, the end of the draft and the going towards the end of the war in Vietnam, that the mass movement that had carried so much of 1960s events was beginning to end.
I might actually disagree with one part of that, which is that the student, you're right, the student movement was tended to be dying off after 1970. However, the opposition to the war in general was just as great up through 72, the end of 72, and it was returning veterans who carried, who were in the forefront. So, yes, the student movement did tend to die down, but the opposition to the war continued until the ceasefire at the beginning of 73.
Mike Redd, tell us about the activities of the Weather Underground and the bombings that it carried out. I hear a lot of figures, usually over two dozen bombings.
Yeah, the strategy of the Weather Underground became what you might call symbolic bombings, which was targets where no one would be hurt, and it would point up some terrible injustice that was going on, especially the while the war was continuing. But afterward, the continuation of the system, which we called imperialism, which is the global domination, and through the use of war. And I in a certain way, the analysis was right, but the choice of tactics and the strategy behind those tactics was misconceived. I actually myself broke with it fairly early on, during the first year in 1970.
Mm-hmm. Most, many people, when they interview Bill Ayers, who was one of the founders of the Weather Underground, he's always asked, why won't he apologize for his illegal acts? How do you react to that? And
I can't speak for Bill, but I think, speaking for myself, I would love to see everyone who was involved in violence during that period and illegal acts apologize. So I'm waiting for Henry Kissinger myself to apologize. He murdered hundreds of thousands of people in Vietnam, and plus there were a number of violent coups, such as in Chile, that he's responsible for. So when those mass murderers apologize, I'll certainly be willing to apologize.
Yeah, I think, and I know you'd agree with this, Mark Rudd, that the figure hundreds of thousands in terms of civilian deaths in Indochina certainly underestimates how many people
were killed.
Yeah, millions.
Actually, the United States murdered between 3 and 5 million people in Indochina. Totally unnecessarily. It was a similar kind of thing as the current war in Iraq and the one in Afghanistan. They were wars of choice. There were other things that could have been done, but the United States wanted war, and so invaded Vietnam with main force troops in 1965. I was an 18-year-old kid at the time, and my response was, we can't let this happen.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stop it.
The book is Underground, My Life with SDS and the Weathermen. Mark Rudd is the author. It's published by Morrow. What crimes, Mark, were you accused of by the federal indictments that sent you underground as a fugitive for 7 years or so?
The original charges had to do with bombings in Chicago, and I think in Detroit, too, and also crossing state lines to incite to riot and conspiracy. These charges were federal felonies, but they were dropped in 1973 by a brilliant and courageous judge in Detroit who ruled that the government's
Kind of?
How they had accumulated evidence against us was illegal.
Yeah, that's actually the government, because of police, FBI, prosecutorial misconduct, had to drop a number of charges. Would you say you were guilty as charged, though?
No, of course not. At the time,
I did put the word "say" in there. You know,
everything that I was involved with was necessary to stop this greater evil that was being done. The judge's name, incidentally, was Damon J. Keith, and I believe he's still alive.
He's a famous and extraordinarily well-respected jurist, indeed, and courageous, as you said. Somewhere in your website, markrudd.com, there's frequently asked questions, FAQs, and one of the questions is, were you, meaning the Weather Underground, and yourself terrorists? Answer that for us, if you would.
Careless. Well, you know, from my perspective now, I think all violence is careless.
Terrorist. Are we saying the same word?
What was the word you used?
Terrorist.
Oh, terrorist.
Yeah.
Terrorist. Ah, well, my answer still fits. I think all violence is terrorism.
Yeah.
I don't, at the time we did not call ourselves terrorists, nor did the press or even the government call us terrorists. It was not a very commonly used term. A tight definition of terrorism has to do with the targeting of civilians. And we fortunately did not do that, although the bombs that were being made in New York were intended for civilian targets, but we kind of approached that, but never carried it off, thank God.
They weren't really civilian. Maybe go into a little about the bombs, the anti-personnel bombs that the Weather Underground people were preparing in New York in 1970 when they exploded in their faces. They weren't really civilian targets. They were military targets and military personnel.
It was mixed. It was a dance at Fort Dix of non-commissioned officers and their dates. So yeah, it included civilians. So I was going to say though that we were driven crazy. I mean, at that time, the United States was targeting civilians regularly, murdering civilians. I consider the war in Vietnam to be a terrorist war, and now I believe all war is terrorism. And all violence is terrorism, whether the state sanctions it or not. There was a moment when we approached a common definition of terrorism, then we pulled back. After that, the Weather Underground took a lot of pains to not hurt people.
Yeah, there's certainly the use of the phrase now. I'm sure you're probably aware that there are any number of people in the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front that have been sentenced to long terms, up to over 20 years for acts that never hurt anyone, but were great amounts of property damage. So
not even great amounts of property damage. One guy, Jeff Lures, is in for 22 years for torching, I think it was two pickup trucks.
Some SUVs out in, what's the word?
Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah.
I saw a film with the owner of the Ford dealership who said, The insurance paid for those trucks a long time ago. I don't know why this guy has to spend 22 years in prison.
Yeah. Actually, I think he's getting out soon on some early release program. But there's a different atmosphere. Certainly, if you, Mark Rudd, Bill Ayers, and others in the Weather Underground would have been apprehended committing the acts that you had or were accused of, there would have been a different outcome, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Also, at the time, there was a concern still for the Bill of Rights and the rights of the accused. Judge Keith in Detroit was, in particular, very concerned with this, with the rights of the accused, and we still had the millennia-old. Habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you declare terrorism, that the suspects are terrorists, they have no rights whatsoever. So, no, we were lucky. Actually, it gave me a great appreciation of the Bill of Rights, and which is fundamental to our legal system.
I could imagine someone going to your website, markrudd.com, and think, boy, this guy's unrepentant. He even has his mugshots, and I use the plural, on his website. One, and maybe you could speak briefly about this, an arrest in Chicago in October of 1969 for an event known as the Days of Rage, and you have a very grim look on your face. You're probably, I'm sure, in your 20s. And then here you have another one, back to Chicago, October 08, so that's almost 40 years, except there you've got a
40 big, years and about 80 pounds.
Yeah, and a big smile on your face.
Yeah, well, I think that Photoshop, the miracle of Photoshop right there is what you've experienced. But
so this isn't a mug? The second one isn't a mugshot?
It's just a current picture.
Oh, you fooled me.
Yeah,
I should have seen the numbers the same. Okay, I got it. You all right? You.
But I'm still smiling, and it's still me. Well, I'm lucky to have gotten through all this. You know, I'm lucky to be alive, and I appreciate that. So I guess that's one of the reasons I'm smiling.
You know, one of the things that it's pretty hard to alter your origins, I've heard it said, and again, I'm more familiar with what's been said and written about Bill Ayers, is that all of you men and women got almost a free ride. Not everybody, of course, but mostly got a free ride because you were white and middle class.
Absolutely. That is one of the main themes in my book. I talk about privilege, you know, and the privilege that comes with class and with race. And many black revolutionaries, Panthers and others from the time were dealt with a lot harsher. Some are still in prison.
Yeah.
Although some of my old comrades, white people from SDS, are still in prison too, which I talk about at the end of the story with the Brinks robbery of 1981.
Now, I'm astounded that you were invited to talk to the FBI Training Academy about terrorism.
Yeah, they wanted a real-life terrorist to come in, and I went. I'm a pacifist now. I believe in nonviolent strategy, and one of the principles that I believe in is that you have to talk with your enemy, you know? So I was invited to the FBI, and I went.
Well, certainly when we look back on the history of the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover, which was, during your most active years, was very reactionary and frequently on the side of the segregationists that set people up, that had this program called COINTELPRO that targeted people in the most unfair and unconstitutional manner. But and for a period, in even in movies in the 70s and the 80s, when someone walked in some action or suspense movie and they said, "I'm from the FBI," you knew that this guy was going to be turn out maybe even to be a hitman or something. But
yeah,
since 9/11, the FBI once again, as it was in the 30s, instead of protecting us from Pretty Boy Floyd and Bonnie and Clyde, they're now protecting us. And Pretty Boy Floyd and Bonnie and Clyde weren't a threat, but these elements that mean us harm frequently are. So do you still see the FBI as, quote, our enemy?
Well, I wonder if you were Arab or Muslim, if you would think that the infiltration of their communities, which is going on right now, is benign. This morning on the story of this latest bust involving using an imam against a couple of Afghan guys, it's pretty horrible. You know, I was approached, incidentally, by the FBI here in Albuquerque to the anti-terrorism squad to talk to them. And I said, "Well, what do you do?" And he says, "Well, most of our work is keeping track of the Muslim community." I said, "Well, absolutely not. I won't be a part of that." Hmm. No, I don't think it's benign at all. And I think it's still a secret police. The CIA appears to be worse. They appear to have been involved in a lot of torture, and the FBI at least appears to have not been torturing people in recent years. That's very nice. I'm glad they aren't doing that. But, no, I think there's still a secret police.
I've been remiss in neglecting to tell people that you're going to be in the Detroit area this coming week. Tomorrow, on Monday, you're going to be at Borders in Ann Arbor. And is that an evening appearance? I don't think we had that.
Yes, 7 o'clock, Borders downtown in Ann Arbor. And on Tuesday, Book Beat in Oak Park, I think it's also 7 o'clock.
Okay, and that's on Greenfield, just north of 696. Yeah, okay. So, and we'll mention that again. Also, those dates will be on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and it'll be in my calendar page. In fact, I'm going to even email you, some of you, about it. Let's, as I look at the clock, this is fascinating. So we're speeding along, talking with Mark Rudd. His book is Underground, My Life with SDS and the Weathermen. And let me just go back a little to perception. And that is, you said how you framed the FBI. I think most people would say, hey, if these guys are involved in nefarious stuff that could wind up to be a 9/11 or even a mini 9/11, do what you got to do.
I think you have to look closer at it. What I've observed here in New Mexico is that oftentimes the FBI will bust somebody for a minor immigration violation, then turn them into an informant, and then develop a case oftentimes off of phony information. I mean, they're looking to justify their budgets. They have to find terrorists in the Arab and Muslim communities. So, and they have to scare people. I mean, the job is always fear. So there's been a number of cases here in New Mexico in which there's been a lot of people leaned on to rat on Palestinian or the Arab community. So I think that there's a danger in having a secret police. If people commit a crime, they should be prosecuted.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's certainly a famous case here in Detroit that subsequently all the charges were thrown out, that Attorney General.
I don't think there's been one actual terrorist prosecution that has succeeded in the United States in the last 8 years since 9/11. I think there's been a lot of scare.
Now, there's been people convicted of conspiracy to commit them.
Yeah, a lot of that is people pleading guilty, too, because they figure, well, it's better to just go to cop a plea of some sort. I don't think there were any actual
actual plots in
actual
motion.
Dangerous plots uncovered. I think it's the fear that keeps the American people supporting war. The goal is war. I know this sounds odd, but I believe, and I think there's a lot of evidence, that the goal of the United States is war. We want war. It keeps our economy going. It keeps us projected throughout the world. So in order to have war, we have to have enemies, and we have to have an internal enemy, too. Take a look at 1984, constant war on the border and constant whipping up of repression against internal enemies.
The book, 1984, by George Orwell, still a must-read.
Right.
We only have about a minute or two left, and I don't know why I'm focusing so much on your talk to the FBI Training Academy at Quantico, Virginia.
The whole thing is kind of insane, in a way. I mean, why did they bring me? Well, I'm not sure. Maybe they I didn't tell them anything that I hadn't written, that's for sure.
How was your reception? Did they
it was mostly cops in the class, and they had no understanding of any history involved. So their attitude was mostly, well, if you do a bad thing, we'll arrest you. So there was no discussion of mm-hmm. history or a system of imperialism and militarism. These things were that they didn't want to talk about that kind of stuff.
Well, real quickly, if a young person came to you today and said, look, I'm just fed up with this system. It's run by elites, even though it has a democratic facade. And my friends and I we're really inspired by the Weather Underground. And we're going to go out and start planting some bombs. You guys did it. What would you say to them?
I say, don't do that. Not a good idea. It didn't work, and it's not going to work in the future. No, the lesson I take from my history is we have to build mass political movements involving people. This is not bombs. And I think the strategy has got to be completely 100% nonviolent.
Well, Mark Rudd, thank you so much for joining me. If you want to hear more, Mark Rudd will be at Borders in Ann Arbor. It's right downtown on State and Main. It's going to be Monday night at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Also, the following evening at Bookbeat in, And Bookbeat in Oak Park on Tuesday at 7 p.m. as well. I'll have those all listed on my website at Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Mark Rudd, and you go to, I don't know if I said that, but I can't hurt to say it again. Mark Rudd, RUDD.com for more information. The book is terrific. My life with the title is Underground, My Life with SDS and the Weathermen. Mark Rudd, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Peter, thank you very much. It's been an honor.
101 Riff presents our 40th anniversary concert featuring Stone Temple Pilots with Taddy Porter and Detroit's own Toby Red featuring Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers at the Fillmore. Detroit this Wednesday night. The show is sold out, so keep it tuned onto the Riff. For the only chance where you can win tickets to the show from Budweiser, great times are waiting. Grab some Buds, McDonald's. Right now, get 20 Juicy Chicken McNuggets for just $4.99 only from McDonald's. I'm loving it. And 101 WRIF, everything that rocks.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425. It's amazing how great your home looks with new Carpenter flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
How much are you paying to invest in stocks? Keep your costs low with a ShareBuilder account from ING Direct. Unlike many other online brokerages, ShareBuilder has no account or investment minimums, so you can get started with any amount. And if you text right now, you can get a $50 account bonus after your first investment. Just text the word money to 42330. With ShareBuilder, you can open your account and keep it open with any amount. Text right now to get a $50 account bonus. Just text the word money to 42330 and get more information about this great offer from ShareBuilder. Some restrictions apply. Text the word money to 42330. That's 42330. Message and data rates may apply. Securities products are not FDIC insured, not bank guaranteed, and may lose value, and are offered by ShareBuilder Securities Corporation, a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA.